Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish it. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We'll be talking with Wendell Young, president of the UFCW Local 1776, about, and mark my words, it's coming, another attack on the state liquor stores. The Republicans seem poised to privatize them again, and we're going to talk about privatization tonight a little bit, because I think it's important to understand that the conventional so-called wisdom that Republicans have been spewing, the thought process that goes around this privatization scheme is faulty from the beginning. And no one in the, 5.5 years I've been doing this program, no one has been able to let me know when privatization has worked. I have yet to see a privatization scheme that benefited we the people. So we're going to talk about the campaign to privatize the liquor stores, the state stores that, honestly and truthfully, are great assets for this state. But they're going to try anyway because, you know what? That's their ideology. It's their blind faith belief structure that anything held by you and me, anything that we have collectively is a bad thing. And that all of those things that you and I and all of us share in common should be held by an individual. That they can put that money in their pockets. And that, my friends, is something we're going to have to fight back against. A bunch of stuff today, but first I want to talk a little bit more about the election. Because I think there are a bunch of things at play. A bunch of things at work. And I think this cycle really showed us how impotent our government has become, because corporate America won. The big spenders won. The deep pockets won. The wealthy won. And no matter how you look at it, no matter how you look at what's going on here, the investor class has figured out exactly how to manipulate the voters and convince people to stay home and not vote. That's the part that gets me. And I don't know if you saw this on MSNBC. Alan Grayson was on. And he was also interviewed by Salon, Salon.com. And he made a couple of rational points. One about what he called the so-called enthusiasm gap. He said it was because, and really, they did. They made Democrats look like wimps. And that's what it was that he's saying. Look. You're not going to go out and vote for somebody who you think is a wimp. They did it to Carter. They tried to do it to Clinton, and now they're doing it to Obama and the Democrats as a whole. And, as I said for the longest time, look, people want folks who are going to stand up and fight. And as Grayson pointed out Tuesday happened because Obama and the congressional Democrats didn't fight hard enough for progressive ideas, for progressive values. He told MSNBC, quote, our strategy for 2 years has been appeasement, and look where it got us. reiterating pretty much what I've been saying for years. Grayson went on to say, I think Democrats want to see a fighting leadership. They want to see a fighting president, somebody who actually accomplishes good things for constituents. And I've said that from the very beginning. You want somebody who you can get, who's going to stand behind you in a street fight. You want somebody who you can depend on and is not going to waver. Well, you know, we're going to read the polls. We're going to put our finger in the wind and see which way things go. And you can say that about the Republicans. They are steadfast in their core beliefs. Their core beliefs are the investor class and the wealth class should have everything, and you folks who work for a living, you're going to pay for it. We're going to privatize, we're going to deregulate, we're going to give tax cuts to the wealthy. They're unwavering and have been for 30 years. And look where that's gotten us. And he goes on to focus on a couple of things, saying, look, we should have focused on, right at the beginning, immigration reform, civil rights, women's rights, and the Employee Free Choice Act. And that's what I said right from the very beginning of the Obama administration. H.R. 1 should have been the Employee Free Choice Act. Because immediately people would have seen their lives get better. And what happened? Well, Grayson pointed it out in the Salon piece, an enthusiasm gap that turned into a voting gap. He said, quote, in my case, it's a simple matter of the Democrats not voting. We don't have the final numbers in the election yet, but in the early voting, when you compare the vote to the 2008 election, the Republicans dropped 20%. The Democratic vote dropped 60%. And that, my friends, is what happened. So now where do we go from here? Tuesday's gone. We need to start thinking about how we're going to back the state stores. Could Pennsylvania be the first northeastern state that becomes a right-to-work state? These are big questions. So what do you think is going to happen? Do you think the president's going to reach out and do what we think he's going to do, which is move to the middle, or in this case, further to the right? Evidently, he wants a meeting that's just not a photo op. He said, I want us to talk substantively about how to move the American people's agenda forward. So basically, the Bush tax cuts for billionaires, going to be safe. So wealth class, money well spent, good for you. The president also said that we have to act in order to assure the middle class families don't see a big tax spike because of how the Bush tax cuts were structured. It is very important that we extend those middle-class tax breaks. And it's exactly what I've been saying for the longest time. Sorry, top 2%. You're where the money is. You're going to have to pitch in during these times of need. The Republicans are really holding us hostage so that their campaign funders will benefit. And you got to give them credit. They are steadfast in their belief. They are steadfast in their commitment to the wealth class, because they know which side their bread's buttered on. And this meeting is set for November 17th. And I got to say, at the end of all this, you've got to give the Republicans credit because they are so steadfast in their beliefs, even if they're wrong.
Third party discipline is better than the Democrats. The comment you made several times in this show, Rick, that the Democratic Party is like herding cats. There's some truth to that. We don't have the discipline they do.
And today we're going to talk about some of the numbers and some of the interesting things that have come out of this election. Because there have been some really kind of interesting themes that have run through this anti-government fervor that seems to have hit the right, which not really a big surprise. I think the key thing that we did learn is that the Democrats stayed home. Labor got out and voted, but the Democrats stayed home.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the numbers, Rick, in Philadelphia. 25%. Pitiful. Absolutely pitiful.
Yeah, what were we hearing? Oh, it's up to 40%. If you'd had 40%, we'd had
I don't know about Democratic governor. We certainly have a Democratic senator, that's for sure.
So Obama has dropped the cap and trade thing. So plans to, those are gone. No more cap and trade. At a press conference yesterday, the president said, quote, cap and trade was just one way of skinning the cat. It was not the only way. He says, I'm going to be looking for other means to address the problem. He went on to say, it's doubtful that you could get the votes to pass through the House this year or next or the year after. Now, you may wonder, and this is one of those things that I think is important to understand, why the Republicans are so anti-EPA. They are set dead smack against any type of environmental protection. And why is that? Well, interestingly enough, a 2007 Supreme Court case ruled that the EPA could treat heat-trapping gases as a pollutant. They can, in essence, saying the EPA has jurisdiction. They have jurisdiction to regulate greenhouse gases. And industry knows that. The polluters know that. They know that if the EPA has the power, they're going to have to clean up their mess. So what they do is they've been funneling money to all these anti-climate people, funding all of these studies and these think tanks and all of these groups who deny that there's any, oh, there's nothing going on. It's not getting hotter. Except, you know, on those days where it was 90-some degrees for, you know, a month at a time. But that's how it used to be back in the 100 years ago. And we know that because, I don't know. But that's why they're dead set against any type of EPA involvement. Because they know it's going to cost the polluters money. And my position has always been, I've been very consistent on this issue. It's always been that we have the right to regulate emissions. Why should we create a billionaire exchange? Which is what I think the cap and trade thing would have done. We would have given these credits away so that the polluters could then benefit. I'm just not in favor of that at all. Now, I understand on the global scene, we need to figure something out. And personally, I'm in favor of a cross-border emissions tax, where if China wants to pollute and they want to bring those products in here, we need to have some way of assuring that the people who are producing things do it in a way that's not killing us. Pretty simple, I think.
That does sound practical to me, right?
But, you know, this isn't something that the GOP wants. This isn't something Republicans want to talk about. They want to be able to do whatever it is they want to do and be damned with the consequences. Let somebody else deal with that. Let it flow downriver. Well, folks, eventually you get to the bottom of the river. Eventually you're at one of the stops. And if you pollute the water and you pollute the air, what do we have left? And I'm looking at this stuff, and, you know, maybe you're not seeing it, but if you're not protecting what's going in the... Look, I grew up in Cleveland, home of one of the worst environmental disasters with a river that caught on fire because it was so badly polluted by the steel mills. Now, that could have been anywhere in this country. That could have been right here on the Susquehanna. It could have been over in Bethlehem on the Lehigh, with Bethlehem Steel just spewing as much pollutants and as much garbage into the water as they could. Could have been anywhere, but it happened to be my hometown. So I'm a little sensitive to that. I remember Lake Erie being brown, where fish didn't swim, they floated sideways. Is that what we want to go back to, giving corporations the ability to say, hey, we can spew whatever we want? Now, look, I'm not so crazy that I'm going to say, well, we can't have, everything has to be 100%. That's not possible. But we have the technology. We have the ability to produce goods and services and products in a way that does not damage our environment and does not harm our children, harm ourselves. That simple. Anyway, we're going to take your calls today, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you're near a computer, you can watch us online at thericksmithshow.com. We're going to take a quick break right back after this to talk about some of those numbers that the labor unions got out that the Democrats didn't. Right back after this.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the midterm elections were about the economy, but was not an endorsement of right-wing policies.
It was a mandate to fix the economy and to create jobs. Here's what it wasn't. It wasn't a mandate for the policies most Republicans campaigned on. The election wasn't an endorsement of tax cuts for the wealthy or for undermining Social Security or the minimum wage. It wasn't the rejection of building a middle-class economy.
64% of union members voted for Democrats, according to AFL-CIO polls, while non-union working-class whites without college degrees voted by a 16-point margin for Republicans. The polls also showed that a large majority of these voters admitted that they didn't know what the Republican agenda is. OpenSecrets.org says corporations spent 74.2% of all the money spent on this election, swamping other spenders. Trumka vowed that the AFL-CIO would stay in the fight to improve workers' lives and would do so both in and outside of elections. The primary media narrative is that voters were seeking a more conservative agenda and therefore voted out Democrats in favor of Republicans. But is that true? Jesse Russell crunches the numbers.
If one looks at the Democratic losses by ideological caucus, a different trend seems to emerge. The Congressional Progressive Caucus only lost 3 of the 72 progressive seats that were up for grabs. Meanwhile, the moderate New Democrats coalition had 45 New Democrats-only seats up for grabs. They lost 15 of those seats. And the worst performing of election night was the conservative Blue Dog coalition, which had 29 seats up for grabs. They lost 13. The current House of Representatives Democrat makeup is 30% progressive versus 39% moderate and conservative Democrats. If the next session of Congress were to begin today, the Democrat composition would be 38% progressives and 28% moderates and conservatives.
The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says the union narrowly lost an election at the merged Delta Airlines to represent some 20,000 flight attendants. That vote was 9,216 for and 9,544 against. It means Northwest Airlines flight attendants, who are now part of the merged Delta, will lose their union representation after 63 years. But AFACWA says there was intimidation and interference in the election from Delta management, and they're taking those complaints to the National Mediation Board in an effort to get a fair election free of management intimidation. Private employers added 43,000 jobs in October, still not the type of job creation needed to keep pace with those entering the job market, but better than economists had projected. Those numbers come from payroll company ADP. The overall pace of downsizing is also down, dropping 62% from the same time last year. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody, everybody, let's get into it. Get stoned, get it started, get it started, get it started.
Now's the time to start getting together. Now's the time to start organizing for the next election cycle, because you can't hold your heads down. You got to stand up, stand tall, and fight back. And now is the time to start that fight back. The last good news of this election cycle, if there was any real good news, Senator Patty Murray from Washington has been reelected. It's been called, so that's at least a small bright spot the Democrats have held. The Senate. So unlike Pennsylvania, on the national level, the Republicans aren't going to be able to roll over everybody. Here in this state, I'm going, wow, we got some real big fights ahead of us. Because right now there's no opposition. And I, you know, as I said today, I think we're going to learn the lesson from Republicans again on how to move an agenda. Because I think votes are going to come up, votes are going to be had, they're going to be signed, and they're going to go, oh, Democrats in the room. Have a seat. I think that's how it's going to go.
Well, and unfortunately, some of the Republicans that are in, the vast majority of them, are not moderate. That swing conservative has come to Pennsylvania, and plus the numbers are usually in their favor, which does not bode well for any progressive issues.
And that's why people have to, you know, we cannot sit on the sidelines for the next 2 years. We have to be involved now, contacting our representatives and letting them know, look, if you do some of this crazy stuff,
We will remember you in 2 years, and you will find yourself on that unemployment line. But the key to, I think the point of this election was quite simply that Democrats were not engaged. They're looking at the people that they've elected. The media had propped the Obama administration up to the point to where everyone thought he was the Messiah. When things didn't happen as quickly as we were led to believe, the messaging was there. The messaging was simple. You didn't turn this around overnight. We're not living in rivers of gold. Prosperity isn't raining down on us. And people started to get frustrated. Now, as I said from the beginning, had we not extended unemployment benefits, which I'm not saying that we shouldn't have done, because I do believe that families needed it, and I do believe that that helped save the economy, but had we not, and you would have seen mass suffering, I think there would have been more interest in getting people moving quicker, and we wouldn't have had all the stall and delay that we had with the Republicans. That said, I think we're still going to feel that pain, because the reality is that they are not going to pass any more extensions, I don't think, because you're going to have to increase the deficit a little bit. And the Republicans have said no more deficits, no more spending. So that means you unemployed folks who've been on unemployment longer than 26 weeks, that means goodbye. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Or you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. There were some interesting things about this election. The steelworkers, for instance, they put out a press release today saying that they got their people out to vote. They got union members out to vote. Their activities, they distributed 1.6 million leaflets, for instance, at work sites. They made 750,000 phone calls from union halls across the country, and they activated their members. They got their members out to vote, and that did bear out. You did see union voters getting out. They did vote. So the labor movement can say, look, we did get our people out to vote. Now, what's important here, and this is where labor has to use their clout, because it's not about Democrat or Republican. It's about issues. In this state, I think agree this should not be a right-to-work state. And the Republicans have to know that if they pursue that, labor will fight back. Labor will stand up, and they will get their people out, and they will mobilize. And, you know, part of me says, fine.
Well, I think we can't forget this, Rick. We sometimes generalize Republicans anti-labor, Democrats pro-labor. We clearly know that that's not always true. There are still a good number of Republicans that are in blue-collar districts where labor is strong, and I'm not so sure that some. Now, whether they're enough, only time will tell, but there's some Republicans that I do believe will be a little hesitant to vote for a right-to-work state.
Well, as I've said before, look, at the end of this, folks, it comes down to issues for me. It's not about blind ideology. That is the extreme conservative movement, the blind ideology. And as you saw in this election, the extreme left is not blind ideologically either. They didn't come out to vote. They didn't support the Democrats, even though that was in their best interest. They said, you know what, we're going to abstain. And as they say, sometimes not doing something is as powerful as doing something. You have now decided by default. So this was an interesting election cycle, but labor did get their voters out, and the Democrats didn't. And it shows a lack of organization. It shows a lack of really having something to motivate their people with. And I blame them for this.
Well, it's a major question, Rick, and we touched on it last night. Which way does Obama go? Does he listen to his more progressive Congress? Or does he go with maybe a gut feeling that says, well, he's got to show that he's willing to work with the Republicans and run towards the middle?
But here's the thing. He has had his hand out asking for Republican input for 2 years. He has been out there trying to bring them to their side. Now, look, at the end of this, and the Republicans have come out and said, there's no working with this guy. There's no working with him because he's not doing what we want him to do. McConnell himself said, you know, we'll work with him. We'll work with him when when he's willing to do what we want him to do. And, you know.
Yes, he said that today, I think, at the Heritage Foundation, basically. He basically said he's going to have to address our issues. Now, does that sound like someone who's willing to compromise?
Well, here's what he said.
Political priority over the next 2 years should be to deny President Obama a second term.
Our political priority over the next 2 years, our priority, is to deny him this. And that means fight on every front. That means go and attempt to, and they know they've already softened the repeal thing. Well, you know, we ran on that, but, you know, maybe we're going to have a little harder time. Maybe, you know, going to have a harder time with that. But they, you know, they told their voters, repeal and replace. That's our first goal. Now they're kind of softening that. Well, you know, maybe not. Because they understand. They understand politically. If they take something away from the American people, even if they don't view it as exactly what they wanted, like me, for instance, it's not exactly what I want. But take that away from me, and I'm going to fight you over it.
I'm surprised that they would even backtrack a little bit, because you would think that they would be smart enough to understand it.
They're going to backtrack on it all.
At the end of the day, they can't, the president's going to veto it, but there might be, and I heard the president kind of touch on it, there might be some things in the reform that maybe they can talk about, where the Obama administration is maybe reconsidering, but there are relatively minor things. But those are the kind of things that maybe they can find common ground on.
And that's good. But at the end of the day, the Republicans, and this is where the Republicans have a real problem within their ranks, they elected Tea Party people who were adamantly opposed to the health care bill on any level. There is nothing about it that they like. So what happens when those Tea Party people say, no, we're not coming along? What happens when those folks raise a stink? What happens there? And I'm waiting for that with great anticipation.
I don't know if you heard, the rebellion has already started. They targeted Senator Brown now from Massachusetts. He did something they didn't like, and they have already targeted him. So the rebellion is on, Rick.
Good, and that's a good thing, so that they can see a little bit of what Democrats have been going through for years. And that, to me, honestly, they don't have a DeLay figure. Say what you will about John Boehner. He is not Tom DeLay. He is not going to be the guy who holds that Republican Party in place. He's got the money, but I don't think he's going to have the control. I really, really don't. We're going to take a quick break right here. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We're going to come back with Wendell Young, president of UFCW Local 1776, right back after this.
Don't cry for Jamie Dimon, America. As CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, this ruling mogul of Wall Street must now cope with a recently enacted financial reform bill, which imposes a host of new regulations meant to rein in the rip-off frauds and other excesses of Wall Street bankers. Republican lawmakers, however, are crying that the Democrats' reform bill puts a crushing burden on the poor financial giants. While these Wall Street apologists wail and keen, slick operators like Dimon are wasting no time on tears. Instead, they're devising ways to slip out of the new regulatory reins. For example, the law limits the outrageous overdraft fees that banks have been sneaking onto our debit card accounts. No problem. The giants are quietly imposing new maintenance fees for basic checking accounts. Forget receiving a free toaster when you open an account. Banks now hit you with up to $15 a month just for the privilege of putting your money in their bank. Dimon insists that this is necessary. Quote, if you're a restaurant and you can't charge for the soda, you're going to charge more for the burger, he lectures. Come on, Jamie, drop the mom-and-pop pose. You're not a little restaurant struggling to make ends meet. You had a monopolistic financial behemoth that helped ruin the economy for America's moms and pops, then took billions in taxpayer bailouts, used the crisis to increase its monopoly power, continues to get federally subsidized money, just announced a 78% hike in profits, and recently paid you a salary and bonus of $18 million. This is Jim Hightower saying, the diamonds of Wall Street keep picking our pockets because they believe they're entitled to excessive profits and paychecks. To help bring these greed heads down to earth, visit Americans for Financial Reform. Find them at www.ourfinancialsecurity.org.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Demanding the super rich pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show. I got a
Rick, 1-888-520-7425, or check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You can watch the live streaming video from the studio here. We're going to take a couple minutes, and Wendell Young will be right along and talk about the state store issue, which I think, I got to tell you, I think is coming, and it's going to come quickly, and it's going to be one of these things that you're really going to be surprised, I think, at how fast it comes, because Corbett needs money. Corbett is going to need to figure out how to get money quickly so that he doesn't have to go back on his anti-tax pledge. It's that simple. So we're going to sell off a major asset to the state. We're going to give it away. Just give it away. Like the good pastor James David Manning says. Just give it away.
And if you think about the numbers, Rick, in less than 6 years, if you take the average of the value that's being reported out there in the public, in less than 6 years, the amount of money put back in the Treasury exceeds the value of what they're going to get at one time. So after that 6 years, people in Pennsylvania will lose and lose big time. And once it's eliminated, you ain't getting it back.
And that's the thing, that it's that short-sightedness that bothers me. It's like the people in Pittsburgh who leased off the parking garages. You know they're going to raise the rates. You know right from the beginning they're going to raise the rates. It's the same thing with the turnpike. You know whoever is going to lease it is going to raise the rates. So why don't we just say, you know what, we're going to raise the rates and we benefit from it. That I am not getting the logic in saying, oh, we need to have this private for-profit corporation who's going to pay $2 billion for the liquor license. Let's just say somebody buys all the liquor license and they're very generous and they give us $2 billion. Okay? So over the next 50 years, they've got to make that $2 billion back with profit, with interest. And what's interesting is it's how they usually go about it. And we end up paying for it anyway. They cut wages. They cut benefits. They create some of the most bizarre schemes possible so that, like when I was a kid, for instance, it was no problem for me to go to the corner store and buy, at 15 years old, buy a case of beer or buy a bottle of wine or buy a bottle of 42 proof vodka. Never had a problem. Didn't have a problem growing up in Cleveland because it was all decentralized. You had several stores located within walking distance that you could go to where they would sell you, as long as it was cash, where they would sell you whatever you wanted because they needed to make a profit. They needed to eke out a living. So it meant, because there was so many of them, and this is the problem. When you start talking about decentralizing and allowing these liquor stores to be bought up by who knows who, it then ends up being a situation where there are more of them. And do we really want more drunken people walking around?
Well, and I guarantee you, Rick, what's going to happen, you privatize these companies, are going to hire people probably at a low wage, very little training, and you know what's going to happen. Their buddies come in. They know somebody. Who's going to know? Whereas with the system we have now, they're very well trained. They know never to sell alcohol to anyone underage. under penalty of losing their jobs.
And it's a good job, and that's the difference. The reality is the people who work in these state stores, they make a very good living. They can pay their bills. They can, they don't have to do shady things. You never see a liquor store getting held up. You never see inventory being stolen. You never see any of that social problem stuff. Why? Because it's all above boards.
And the Republicans always like to point out, we're one of the few left. Are we one of two?
I'm not sure if it's
run
two.
By the state. Well, but here's the opposite end of this. There are states that had state liquor stores, and they got rid of them. And you can compare the rates of crime in the areas of the after they privatized it. You can compare the rates of underage drinking. You can compare the rates of underage drinking involved in crimes. And they all went up by a considerable amount. My point is this. There is a price to be paid by society to privatization. It's as simple as that. I know the Mad Mothers were very effective. And I'm sure the Mad Mothers are going to crank it up, and they need to go to the halls up there in Harrisburg and tell these legislators what for.
So what are your thoughts? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Or you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I go back to my childhood. And look, a kid grew up on the streets. You learned how to do a lot of these things. I don't know that I want that access today. There are too many things today that you can really get into trouble with. And making that available. And because I got to tell you, I remember 14, 15 years old going to the corner store. And, I still remember the three or four people who would be willing to, no matter what, sell you whatever you wanted, as long as you had cash in hand. And I worry that this is where we're going to end up. This is the kind of direction we're going to go in. And it's troublesome. So 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I'm sure most people have those kind of stories. So let's go to the phones. We got Mike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Mike?
Hi, Rick. Hey, listening to the discussion there about Governor Corbett and his need for cash. Yeah, he's got a need for cash because the press is calling it $5 billion. My estimate is closer to $8 billion that we're short, because there's a couple of things out there hanging fire that they don't talk about. One, the budget that we're currently in that started last June anticipated having taxes passed in October.
Yep.
That was supposed to fill in. So we don't have the money to finish the current budget year. And we got a $5 billion shortfall toward the next budget year. And there's the $3 billion that Ed Rendell took from the doctor's fund, malpractice fund,
right,
that he lost in court in a 5-1 decision that's being appealed. Well, that's going to go nowhere. So that's $3 billion they're going to have to pay back to that fund. Probably in the next year. So, my math says we're looking at $8 billion.
And not to mention the unemployment money that we took from the state. And there's a storm coming. And
yeah, I mean, it's that simple. And you're right, he's going to want money. But you know what? Like I said when I called in last night, he doesn't have the time. That's the problem. Yeah, it'd be great to sell the liquor stores, but that's not an easy thing to do. Just... if you had the legislation signed the day he took office, the 18th of January, to authorize it, it's likely to take a year to get the first check cashed.
Yeah, and the other part of this is, look, do you think someone who's going to be buying those licenses are going to look at the situation the state's off in and say, oh, yeah, I'm going to give you top price? And they're going to say, no, I know you're desperate, and I'm going to give you as little as I can.
Right, and that's exactly what you're going to get. No, he's got himself a crisis of unparalleled magnitude. Now, there are a couple of draconian things I can think of he might do. One is he might just shut down government for 3 months.
Well, that would be, that's a discussion to be had. Then I think people would see maybe see exactly what it is in their lives are affected by a government that's shut down. No trash pickup, no roads being plowed, right. No police force.
Yeah, you know, but that's what the magnitude of this is. I mean, yeah, $5 billion is a nice figure, but by my estimate, it's substantially more than that. And I don't know of anything that he can do that will give him even $5 billion in the first 100 days of his administration.
No, there's nothing he can do. I mean, there's not a fire sale that would net that kind of income. Not a fire sale to be had.
There's, in fact, one thing that he can do that will affect all of it, and that's to lay off a huge, just an unimaginable number of state employees, and he will need to make that decision probably within the first 30 days of administration.
Well, let's say he does that. Isn't in effect, aren't you in effect shutting government down?
Well, I think what we'll get is we will have government and we will very carefully choose what we will respond to. I mean, you're going to get rid of he talks about getting rid of the 17,000 cars, and I love that. Well, you know, excuse me, a large chunk of those 17,000 cars are in the legislature.
Yeah.
And the legislature is a separate branch of government that he has absolutely no authority to do anything to.
But it's a nice talking point.
Right, it's a nice talking point. So if you tell me we're going to go in and we're going to take away the cars from, let's say, the senior management, bureau director level and below, in the Commonwealth right now. Well, these are the people you haven't had a raise in 4 years. And you're going to take their car away now, right?
Yep.
Ain't looking good. I think some of those people are going to start to bag it really soon.
But isn't that what they want? I mean, isn't the destruction of our governmental structure the whole point of all of this? Isn't this what the conservatives have run on? Isn't this what the Tea Party wanted? I mean, aren't we living out what they've advocated for the last year?
Maybe. I mean, and maybe that's really what they do. Maybe they get together on the after the 18th, after they've spent all the money they're going to spend on the parties and the hubbub after the inauguration, and come in the following Monday and pass a bill that says the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is hereby dissolved. And sign it, and he signs it, and okay, we can go home now. We're done.
I don't think that's going to happen, because don't they want paychecks too?
Well, you start to wonder. I don't know. You know, they said they wanted to drag it, get it small enough they could drag it in and drown it. You know, it doesn't, not like it's going to do much for you after it's dead.
Yep. Well, here's Grover saying it himself.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it in the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
And you know, I mean, after it's gone, dudes. I mean, you got all those buildings now. You could sell the Capitol. That's a pretty fancy building. I'm sure you could find an Arab sheikh who'd like to have that. That's worth a dollar or two. Or an idea I had a long time ago. Why do we just have slot machines in casinos? You could line the halls of the Capitol with slot machines. People could stand out waiting to see their legislature, playing the slots, having a good time. We could be making a buck here. I don't understand it.
And that's a great thing. You might actually get them involved and actually go and lobby their legislature. That's not a bad idea.
I thought it was a great idea.
You can run busloads.
Every state building in Pennsylvania should have the walls lined with slots.
Nice. Oh, Mike, always, always interesting.
Have a good one, Ray.
Thanks so much for the call. Line the walls with slot machines. Well, hey,
funny.
You might get people involved. You might get people wanting to participate.
I have a question. Is Mike going to put, you know, like a $10 voucher for us? You know, maybe slice of pizza at a local pizza shop. Just like,
maybe get a lunch at the cafeteria that they reopened.
Just like in Atlantic City.
That they reopened after having all the health department problems. Anyway, let's take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. We're right back after this.
Don't find your way.
of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
You know the thing about this whole state store privatization scheme? Is that it's going to be the big corporations who are going to win out on this. It's going to be the Rite Aids, the Wegmans, the big chains. They're the people who are going to, they're the ones who are going to win out. Because they always win out in these privatization schemes. And they're not going to create any more jobs. In fact, they're going to cost the state jobs. Because what's going to happen is you're just going to add liquor as another store, as another item in the grocery store. You're going to add liquor and wine and whatever as another item at the drugstore. Just like they did where I lived in Cleveland. It's just going to be another item. You haven't created another job. And what I'm saying is these are good paying jobs that have taxpayers who pay into the coffers. They make sure that every bottle, every penny that goes through that establishment is taxed properly and we, the shareholders, benefit from it. It sounds like there's no upside to this, but it comes back to this bizarre belief that the private sector always does what's right. And they always act in their best interest. And they do. In their best interests. Is it in their best interest to sell to minors, to push product? Yeah, because chances are they're not going to get caught. Why? Because we don't have the people out there working to catch them. Because we've shrunk in the number of oversight. People.
Ability, Rick, of having less income, even if it goes privatization. If you don't have adequate numbers in certain parts of the state, they'll simply go out of state to buy their liquor. Which, what does that mean? That means less income. There's so many question marks that, you know, I haven't heard anybody even talk about. And I know that those are the kind of things that we're going to have to talk about, and I think we will talk about in the next month. It's going to be very interesting to see what the governor does. Now, remember, two governors before this have said, you know, we're going to do it, we're going to do it, we're going to do it, and never did it. Although this is different. I'm afraid this governor, perhaps that $2 billion is going to be too big a tipping apple not to bite on.
But you're not going to get $2 billion, and it's just not going to happen.
Well, even worse for him, then. Shame on him. If you're not even going to get $2
billion. But not him. And at the end of it, it's not about him. It's about us. It's about what we're going to lose in all of this. I don't want to give up another asset. We keep selling off our assets. You know, it's like if you owned a house and you were selling off all your furniture so you could pay the mortgage. At some point, you run out of furniture to pay the mortgage, and then they end up taking the house as well. This is the scenario that we're talking about. I've yet to find, and I wish someone would call and tell me what privatization scheme has worked. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. If you know of one, and I can verify it, I'll shut my mouth and I'll say, you know, privatization maybe not be a bad thing. The reality is we know that privatization costs the community. It costs us an awful lot. So let's say we privatize this stuff. We privatize a job. Okay. We still have to make sure that there's oversight. We still have to make sure that those stores aren't selling illegally, aren't doing illegal things, are giving us the money that we're supposed to be getting from tax revenues. That means we gotta hire somebody. So now it's costing us money. So explain to me how this is a good idea. It's not. And on top of that, once you privatize, because you know, look, in this economy, with the state as desperate as it is, do you think somebody's going to walk in? Do you think I'm going to walk in and say, yep, here, Tom Corbett, I'm giving you top price? No, they are absolutely going to lowball. They're going to get it for as little as possible, and now you're stuck. You're stuck overseeing it, and you're stuck making sure that you get every penny of it. And in the long run, it costs you big, big money. And look, all of these workers who work in these stores now, they're all gone, which means it's going to cost us more money because we're going to have to pay unemployment. We're going to lose tax revenue from their jobs. Mm-hmm. And is that a good thing? No, it's not. I've yet to find, again, if you know it, give me a call and tell me, give me one scenario, and we can discuss it, one scenario where we've privatized something and it's made our lives better, because it hasn't. What we end up getting is shoddy service, and it ends up costing us more in the long run. You know, I go back to when I lived in Allentown, and they decided that they were going to privatize our trash collection. And in came the trash collection company. It was $100 a year. And the city and the little township said, oh boy, $100 a year. Absolutely. They went and they sold their trucks. They got rid of everything. They laid off their employees. Goodbye. And in came this company for $100 a year, took our trash away. Then at the end of the 4-year contract, went up to $250 a year.
Surprise, surprise.
Because they got you. They got you by the short hair because you're not going to go buy another truck. You're not going to go buy get those employees back again. And we lost. Did our property taxes go down any? No. But our taxes overall went up because we're now paying a private for-profit corporation to pick up our trash when it used to be done by the township. And better yet, they had all these restrictions of what they would take and how much and when and la la. They used to pick up twice a week, then they went to once. We got worse service. We got less service, and it cost us more. So explain to me again how privatization helps us, because I'm missing it. If you know, there's an economics professor out there who can give me a good example, I'm all ears.
Well, this time I got to say, I've been around this state long enough to, I'd say about every 5 years we have this fight. We have this fight. And before we've been able to beat them off. This time, the truth is, it's about the money. It's about the money. I do believe there's some ideology, of course, that enters into it. At the end of the day, it's about money. We talked about some things I haven't even thought about. How about the shortfall in cash into the state coffers, because these people are making decent money. They're not making $30 an hour, but they're making a decent wage. Do you think if we privatize that they're going to pay their clerks selling this whiskey anything close to that? Of course not. And that has to be entered into the shortfall that the state is going
to
endure.
I mean, to me, the price of it is immaterial. I mean, honestly and truthfully, the price is immaterial, because whoever buys these licenses, if they become available, Do you really honestly and truthfully believe that they're going to voluntarily drop the price? No, they're going to keep it right where it is. In fact, they probably will raise it because they have to pay for the money back. They got to pay their investors back. You're not going to invest in buying a license to lose money. Absolutely not. So they may even raise the price of it. And this idea that competing liquor stores in one town, is that what we want? We want more people being drawn to it. And from a social standpoint, especially right now during the economic crisis, you've got people who are drinking more. Do you really want sales going, oh, yeah, take some more?
I mean, you mentioned Rite Aid, and for good reason the last time. I mean, it almost came to fruition. Rite Aid was mentioned over and over and over. They were going to gobble up some of these. Now, do you think, really, if especially these corporate entities buy these licenses, do you really think that they're going to put two in one community? It ain't going to happen.
Look, I'm not just talking about Rite Aid, and I don't want to single them out. Because it's not them. It's the industrial mentality. It's that mentality where the big corporations are going to be the only ones buying these licenses up. You and I, we're not going to have the inside track to get one. And again, this is another one of those cronyism moments where only the people with the inside information, the lobbyists, to get us in the door, that's ripe for corruption, ripe for cronyism. I say this should die right now, and we should be contacting our legislature right now.
The irony is, you mentioned about the cronyism, they tried to make the argument that, oh, you're going to have all these mom and pop operate. Well, of course you're not. You need to have the money. You need to have a little inside influence. And these little mom and pop operators just don't have it. Plain and simple.
1-888-RICK. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Again, to me, this is a very simple issue. And we need to get in front of this. It hasn't ramped up yet, but it's in the works. And I'm telling you that nothing good can come of this. Because once they get it in their mind that they're going to be able to balance their budgets on the back of the taxpayers, balance their budgets on the back of the people who can least defend themselves, they're going to do that. And, you know, like Mike called in the last segment and said, you know, they could balance it on the backs of the state workers. Is this where we want to go? And maybe this is a fight that has to be had. Maybe people have to see exactly what their government does. Because I think most people don't really understand the extent of the services and the things that are done for them. You know, we keep hearing the Tea Party bashing government. Why? It's an easy target. They can't fight back. They literally cannot fight back. If you went after a private for-profit corporation like that and bashed them, they'd sue you for libel. They'd come after you. They'd shut you down. But it's these people who go after their government because they're easy targets. And what's interesting is that we buy into it. We've actually bought into we the people are a bad investment. Us holding an asset is a bad investment. And I look at these state stores, and we need to save our state stores. Because I want a quality product, I want it at a reasonable price, but I also want it controlled to the point where it's not on every street corner, and we don't have the problems that a lot of areas have. It's that simple for me.
And there's another factor here, make no mistake. A lot of times they're targeted simply because they're union employees.
I got to be honest, you know, that doesn't play into it an awful lot. The fact that they make a good wage and they pay a decent, they're paid a decent wage, that means something to me. But from a societal standpoint and from an investor's standpoint in this state, those take priority for me. The fact that it's an asset that pays into the coffers that I don't have to pay, which means my state tax and my property taxes are lower. The fact that it's a controlled environment where my children aren't going to get to it. I'm in favor of that. And then the fact that it pays a good, decent living wage to workers, that's important as well. Real, real simple stuff for me. 1-888-520-RICK, right back after this. Stick around.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the midterm elections were about the economy, but was not an endorsement of right-wing policies.
It was a mandate to fix the economy and to create jobs. Here's what it wasn't. It wasn't a mandate for the policies most Republicans campaigned on. The election wasn't an endorsement of taxes for the wealthy or for undermining Social Security or the minimum wage. It wasn't the rejection of building a middle-class economy.
64% of union members voted for Democrats, according to AFL-CIO polls, while non-union working-class whites without college degrees voted by a 16-point margin for Republicans. The polls also showed that a large majority of these voters admitted that they didn't know what the Republican agenda is. OpenSecrets.org says corporations spent 74.2% of all the money spent on this election, swamping other spenders. Trumka vowed that the AFL-CIO would stay in the fight to improve workers' lives and would do so both in and outside of elections. The primary media narrative is that voters were seeking a more conservative agenda and therefore voted out Democrats in favor of Republicans. But is that true? Jesse Russell crunches the numbers.
If one looks at the Democratic losses by ideological caucus, a different trend seems to emerge. The Congressional Progressive Caucus only lost 3 of the 72 progressive seats that were up for grabs. Meanwhile, the moderate New Democrats coalition had 45 New Democrats-only seats up grabs. They lost 15 of those seats. And the worst performing of election night was the conservative Blue Dog Coalition, which had 29 seats up for grabs. They lost 13. The current House of Representatives Democrat makeup is 30% progressive versus 39% moderate and conservative Democrats. If the next session of Congress were to begin today, the Democrat composition would be 38% progressives and 28% moderates and conservatives.
The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says the union narrowly lost an election at the merged Delta Airlines to represent some 20,000 flight attendants. That vote was 9,216 for and 544 against. It means Northwest Airlines flight attendants, who are now part of the merged Delta, will lose their union representation after 63 years. But AFACWA says there was intimidation and interference in the election from Delta management, and they're taking those complaints to the National Mediation Board in an effort to get a fair election free of management intimidation. Private employers added 43,000 jobs in October, still not the type of job creation needed to keep pace with those entering the job market, better than economists had projected. Those numbers come from payroll company ADP. The overall pace of downsizing is also down, dropping 62% from the same time last year. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
That's what they want to do. They want to take a sledgehammer to the state stores, break them up, and sell them off to the highest bidder, which probably wouldn't be very high. MPM writes, emails me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. If they really believe in capitalism, why does there have to be any licenses for a liquor store? Let anyone who wants to start one just do it. Hey, that supports the small business position. They make jobs, right? I don't know that we really want to have the argument of everybody who wants to start a liquor store can. I don't so. Not going there with you, but thanks for the email. Appreciate it anyway. Another email writes, Rick, talk about Phil Hare and Feingold. They were Wall Street and the International Chamber of Commerce's targets. The American people need to know what Phil Hare and Russ Feingold have done for the working class. Russ Feingold was the only senator against the Patriot Act that made him a target for the military-industrial complex or the war profiteers. Thank you. Keep up the good work. We need more guys like you. And thanks for the email, Romeo. Again, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Look, Phil Hare, a great friend of the show. We've had him on numerous times. I can't even say how many times he's given us time to talk about working class issues. I've said he is a true working class hero. And it's a shame that he was beaten down by a teabagger. Somebody who, honestly and truthfully, another one of these no regulation, no worker rights, open up the borders, let everything go.
I'm really, really interested to see how things are going to turn out in the coming months. And Russ Feingold's loss, you knew he had the bullseye on his back, much like Alan Grayson. You knew that the big money special interests wanted them done. And, you know, as Jay Gould said, the former railroad magnate could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. Well, that's what we've done. We've killed the voices of the other half.
I heard Grayson speak today, and he said the last time he ran, I guess he's talking about 08, he only won by like 117 votes, so he apparently is in a district that's, you know, fairly close. So if you look at it in that context, it doesn't surprise you, but Feingold was, you know, he's a real, I mean, to me, he's one of the best senators in Congress.
Especially losing to a guy like Johnson, who uses prison labor so he doesn't have to pay health care.
You just wonder where the collective mindset of the American people are right now.
And, you know, the reality is that we in this country need labor law reform in the worst way. And the reform that we're going to end up getting, because, you know, there's two ways of reforming things, for the good and, of course, for the not so good. Which side of that debate do you think Ron Johnson would be on, given his history of hiring workers that are prisoners, using prison labor, so he didn't have to pay health care, so that the people of the state paid their health care? Because, as you know, in this country, those of us who are not in prison, we don't have the right to health care. So if you want health care guaranteed, I guess go to prison. Anyway, but again, Phil Hare was just out of all of them, that's the one that made me go, man, that's just plain wrong. Anyway, but get ready for it, because it's coming, folks. The investigations are coming. It should be interesting. Get your popcorn, get your programs, because it's going to be interesting. And to me, well, the interesting part of it is going to be what Darrell Issa and the obstructionist party are going to go after first. And I kind of, my gut instinct says it's going to be some very minor, very technical, non-headline grabbing issues. Just to kind of bait the White House into some kind of, bait them into some kind of denial, or to say, you know, hey, you're not entitled to that. Just to find some confrontation so that they can blow it out of proportion. And I think that's what's going to, you know, this is where we're going. ISA has said he's got 100 letters that the White House has to answer immediately. I say the best thing that this president can do, the smartest thing he should do, post everything online. Don't overwork yourself. Don't waste time shuffling through things. Be honest. Be transparent as you said you were going to be. Just put it all out there. And let the American people see how petty these things are. And let them go through it. You know, they got the time and money. They've got the Chamber of Commerce who's more than happy to fund this stuff. Go on. Because when you start to try and cover things up, and this is the advice I'd give the administration, it's when you try to cover stuff up that you get yourself into trouble. We forgive a mistake. We don't forgive trying to cover up a mistake. And that's something to think about as we move forward. You know, had Clinton come out and said, well, you know, like Vitter did. Vitter was the perfect way of doing it, to be honest. He came out and he said, you know, I've made some mistakes. I've made grave mistakes. And that was it. He never admitted to it. He never, you know, never been, was held to it. And they just let it go. But he said he admitted to making grave mistakes, and that was it. What I'm saying the president should do is say, look, here it is. Go ahead. Open, transparent, simple. Because, again, it's like when you try and cover something up. Or you have the bizarre Nixon belief.
When the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
I love that.
Oh, comment. Wow.
When the president doesn't, that means it's not illegal.
I mean, it, here's the thing. If Darrell Issa, in spite of, I think, a real political chance he's taking, decides he wants to go that route, I mean, he's obviously just trying to make sure that the president divert attention to the important things, uses up that two-year period, make sure that the administration doesn't accomplish anything, just like they did with Clinton.
The Times headline today, is Obama's war with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce over? I'm not thinking that it was Obama's war with the Chamber of Commerce. It was the Chamber of Commerce's war against Democrats and the money that they spent, millions and tens of millions of dollars. Business Week reported Chamber President Tom Donahue would like to start chipping away at the president's legislative achievements, such as health care and financial reform, which must still be implemented at the regulatory level. In short, the battles between the chamber and the White House are far from over. And responding to that, Donahue laughs, hell no, they're in the second inning. So I guess we're going to see more chamber, international Chamber of Commerce money being spent on the two big ones, financial reform and health care, because that's where a lot of money is. It's a lot of money. Here's the thing. As the Tea Party takes control here in the January 3rd, I'm really interested, and I don't know that we have a good sense yet of how they're going to vote on trade issues. I don't know that we have a good sense yet of where they're going to go. My gut tells me most of them are free traders. Even though most of the Tea Party people that I've met in person are not, which is kind of weird. Another one of those weird things that you see in when the actual people speak and when the institutionalized party speaks. That, you know, I think the average Joe knows that outsourcing and globalization is costing us jobs. I think they know that. But the institutional people, the big bucks, the people who can spend $110,000 on a bus to drive around the country, those folks, they know that privatization and globalization works for them. It fills their pockets. So I'm really going to be interested because the Korean Free Trade Agreement is coming up. And Dave Johnson over at the Campaign for America's Future has a piece on it today. You can go to ourfuture.org and take a look at it. He says the Tea Party will face many tests when the new Congress convenes next year. Everyone is asking how long will it take before the Tea Party office holders are co-opted by the big money insiders. Free trade is one of those tests. He says Tea Party members absolutely despise free trade agreements, pretty much as I've said, that of course force companies to close their factories and ship jobs out of the country. They want to see Made in America in stores again. But in D.C., insiders backed by big money from big monopolistic international corporations insist trade agreements. And that's coming up. So on the institutional level, it's going to be interesting because there's a push. There's a push by like Ford Motor Company, for instance, to get out there and push this free treatment because they're saying, well, you know, the Koreans, they can bring in 52 cars for every one that we're allowed to send over there. Well, isn't that a failure of our agreement? Shouldn't we be putting a tariff on those 52 cars? If we can't get one into yours, you can't get them in here. It's a failure of them bringing stuff in here, I think.
I would tend to agree with that.
But we just... And look, a guy like Rapport over in Ohio, now the senator from Ohio, one of the people who pushed a lot of these free trade agreements and negotiated some of them, he's now sitting in the halls of the Senate. Do we think privatization is going to get any easier? And globalization is going to get any easier? I say we're going to lose more jobs because of this. But you couldn't explain that to the average conservative voter. And they're going to have to see it for themselves. And in the long run, we're going to be the ones who suffer. We're going to be the ones that suffer. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. You can email me, Rick, at therickssmithshow.com. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Don't cry for Jamie Dimon, America. As CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, this ruling mogul of Wall Street must now cope with a recently enacted financial reform bill, which imposes a host of new regulations meant to rein in the rip-off frauds and other excesses of Wall Street bankers. Republican lawmakers, however, are crying that the Democrats' reform bill puts a crushing burden on the poor financial giants. While these Wall Street apologists wail and keen, slick operators like Diamond are wasting no time on tears. Instead, they're devising ways to slip out of the new regulatory reins. For example, the law limits the outrageous overdraft fees that banks have been sneaking onto our debit card accounts. No problem. The giants are quietly imposing new maintenance fees for basic checking accounts. Forget receiving a free toaster when you open an account. Banks now hit you with up to $15 a month just for the privilege of putting your money in their bank. Diamond insists that this is necessary. Quote, if you're a restaurant and you can't charge for the soda, you're going to charge more for the burger, he lectures. Come on, Jamie, drop the mom-and-pop pose. You're not a little restaurant struggling to make ends meet. You head a monopolistic financial behemoth that helped ruin the economy for America's moms and pops, then took billions in taxpayer bailouts, used the crisis to increase its monopoly power, continues to get federally subsidized money, just announced a 78% hike in profits, and recently paid you a salary and bonus of $18 million. This is Jim Hightower saying, the diamonds of Wall Street keep picking our pockets because they believe they're entitled to excessive profits and paychecks. To help bring these greed heads down to earth, visit Americans for Financial Reform. Find them at www.ourfinancialsecurity.org.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book title, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
The Blue Blood, Sea Red.
The Rick Smith Show.
You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Under pressure from the American and British government, YouTube on Wednesday removed from its site some of the hundreds of videos featuring calls to jihad against Anwar al-Awlaki, an American-born cleric under fire for inspiring violence against the West. Just last week, British government official and Anthony Weiner, Democrat from New York, lodged formal protests with YouTube. It's kind of interesting that, you know, that they would even, I understand the whole free speech thing, but not so sure about that. But the question then becomes, how much of what's on the web, how much of what we do on the internet is free speech? How far can it go? Can we have jihad messages on YouTube? And can we incite people to violence? Can we create pictures of President Obama looking like a Curious George? And of course, it's not a racist who would do that. Or is that our First Amendment right? Is that our free speech? I tend to be one of the people who hates to limit speech. For instance, the Westboro Baptist Church guy hated the position I took. Hate the idea that there are people out there who are that ignorant and that inconsiderate of others. There are a thousand other words I can think of, but they're not FCC friendly. And I think you know which ones they are. You know, I think most of you understand the situation. You know, when a guy goes to a military funeral, protesting a military funeral with the vile nonsense that he was spewing. One, I'm amazed that nobody did what I probably would have done, which was take the sign and give him a rectal exam. I think that's what I would have done. And I guess, you know, that's what surprised me the most, that people didn't do it. Especially the folks who went and did what I thought was the right thing, was to stand in front of them and block the view of them by the family.
The veterans did that.
Yeah.
I think that's the appropriate action. You know, we talked about this several times. If you remember the situation with the ACLU, in Skokie, Illinois. I mean, how much more emotional can you get when many of the families had people put to death in Nazi concentration camps, and here you have the Nazis demonstrating down the main street of Skokie, and they tried to stop them. The ACLU said, no, you can't. And they were allowed. They were allowed to, you know, present their demo. You know, they're scum. I think most Americans agree that they're scum, but if you take their First Amendment rights away, you take everyone's First Amendment rights away.
It's and where does it end? And that's the
right.
question.
That's exactly right.
And look, I don't understand why we just can't leave them alone. You know, just go have your little rally, go do your little thing, and ignore them. You know, when I was a kid, my mother and I would walk down the street, and you saw some guy standing on the corner in the middle of July wearing a heavy winter jacket, muttering some nonsense to himself. You know what we did? We moved to the other side of the street, and we ignored him. Wow, stay away from that guy. Who knows? That's kind of what I think about these folks.
Well, the Hill Baptist Church, I mean, the irony, I think you hit it on the head. They love the controversy because they get their message of hate out, and that's what they want.
Yeah, it's like the bear in the woods thing. Leave them alone. Leave the crazy people alone. Don't poke them with a stick. It only makes it worse. Amazing stuff. But, again, it goes back to this whole technology thing. Where does free speech end? Where does this, you know, we've been seeing cases of bullying on Twitter and on Facebook. The EU, for instance, they're asking for new rules. In fact, they've got new rules that will affect the EU's entire 500 million population. Agency France Presse is reporting the same number of Facebook subscribers, the free subscribers list, when formal legislative proposals emerge from the two-month public consultation launched by Reading in Brussels. What they've done is they're saying, you know what? They want to have the ability to be forgotten. They want to be able to have anything that's on Facebook go away. So if I say I'm going to put some, and we've had this conversation with people who say, well, why don't you put pictures of your kids up more often? Why aren't you writing more things about, you know, about your family? And I say, you know what, I'm uncomfortable with that. But my problem is once you put those pictures out there, they are out there. And you can't bring them back. So in the EU, they're saying, look, we want to make sure that Facebook, if you want to do business in this country, there's got to be a right to be forgotten, which means you can pull all of your information back. I don't know that that's a bad idea. On a personal level, for individuals, for human beings. Now, on an institutional level, I think there can be a problem with that. And once you start getting into government documents and you start getting into some other things, then I start to worry because I still remember what Winston Smith's job was in 1984. I still remember his job title. He was the guy who went back and rewrote history. So he would go and he would take yesterday's newspaper and go, nope, that doesn't fit today's message, crumble it up, throw it in the fire, and rewrite yesterday. That's what worries me about this stuff. Once you start getting into being able to retract stuff, where does it end? But on an individual level, I think, you know, I think you should have the ability to have ownership of your own material and to withdraw it. And they're saying that services want people to reclaim ownership of their digital imprints, including photographs, in an age when many users complain that it's virtually impossible to avoid permanent trace on the web. Now what we find out, and this is another one of those interesting things about social media, there's a company, Social Miner, that has come out with this new software. And what Social Miner does is it goes through all of your Twitter, your Facebook, all your social networkings, LinkedIn, all of that stuff, and it puts it all in one nice little place that your employer can subscribe to. Cisco has this new software. And it's only about $1,000 for the server and about $1,500 per licensee. So if you've got, you know, if I got Jake Long, my employee, and I say, you know, I want to know what Jake Long's doing, I sign up for this service, a Social Miner, and I can find everything about Jake Long that goes out on the web. And I can get alerts whenever Jake Long does something on the web, and I can find out everything. Doesn't that scare you?
Yes, it does.
But you knew it was going to come to that. And again, I think what this is it's people not understanding what the technology in front of them is capable of doing. And the more I read about this, the more I'm going, wow. I'm in a business that I'm putting myself out on the web. Everything I say, every image that you see from our video stream here is now part of the tubes, if you will, part of the internet. It's there. It's out in the world for everyone to view, and I'm okay with that because I've made that consent that everything I put out as part of this business, as part of doing this job, is for consumption for people. And I'm not going to take that back. But, you know, if you're just somebody like you, for instance, have you made that commitment? Have you thought that through? Everything you say sitting there, every movement you make, everything you do being recorded and out there permanently?
Not in that context, I haven't. But I believe, I think it's a little bit different on the internet, in my mind, a little bit. I often thought about that. I mean, how our lives have changed. Now you go to a movie, and you look three rows down, and there's someone on the cell phone in the movie. I mean, my point is this, not that people are rude. People are always going to be rude, but we've allowed technology to intrude on our lives and very much in our privacy. And I think we all have to be aware that that is part of it. There's a big plus, but there's also a big minus. I thought about that.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Or you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. You know, what do you think of this? Is this what you signed up for? I mean, on Sunday nights, I love watching that TV show. It's on MSNBC at night, really late, like 1 o'clock in the morning. It's that Predators Raw, where I forget what the guy's name is. It eludes me, but he was what was his name?
I know.
You don't know
you
either. Chris Hansen. Yes. Chris Hansen was his name. Where they go on the internet and they get these perverts who think they're going to have sex with a 13 or 14-year-old boy or girl, and they come to this house. And they come into the room, and this Chris Hansen walks out. If you haven't seen it, it's hysterical. But it's scary as a parent. But, you know.
And the individual's set up. She, you can hear her voice. You don't see her. She'll say, come out in the kitchen, take a beer or whatever. And
this guy walks out and says, you know, correct. What are you doing here? What did you think was going to happen? And they all lie. You know, they're all, well, you know, the one guy's stark naked. He's nothing on. And he's going, the guy goes, you were going to have sex with a 13-year-old girl. Well, no, I don't think so. He goes, you're naked. But what gets me is and there is a point to this. What gets me is that these guys go on the internet and they think that everything is anonymous. Everything's private. When the reality is, they can find every keystroke you've ever made. Especially at work. You have no privacy on the internet, especially at work. So, interesting stuff. And we also find out that the Pennsylvania Homeland Security Office was monitoring people's tweets. So now, this is even better yet, because I don't think it's going to stop. Because, you know, we got Twitter Tom now as our governor. I'm sure he's going to have rabbit ears, too. Anybody who tweets anything bad about him, get the subpoena police out. But as part of a recent right-to-know request, it has shown that the Pennsylvania Department of Homeland Security has been monitoring Twitter accounts of a whole bunch of people. I don't know about that. I don't know if I'm thrilled about that.
There was an article in the Harrisburg about they actually brought under surveillance a peace group. Right. Down in Reading.
But here's the thing. When you sign up for Twitter, do you not want people to follow you? And is this illegal? I don't think it's illegal. I think once you got to understand the technology that you're playing with. You got to understand that once you put it out there, once you throw it out on the web, everybody can look at it. So interesting stuff. We're going to take a quick break right here. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this. I want me to give my money to someone like you.
right wing. Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Where does it work? Do you think you need an attorney? You probably don't. To protect yourself, you do need to know your rights. Retain control. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722.
We keep South Central Pennsylvania wired. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, right here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And for 93 years, we have proudly provided our contractors and their customers with the highest skilled and best educated electricians in the industry. Whether it's wiring a light socket in a Habitat for Humanity's home or replacing a vital component on a nuclear reactor, our professional electricians do the job right the first time. Our members are the backbone of our community and our nation, working to make tomorrow a brighter day. If you want to join us, or if you need an electrician for your industrial or commercial project, call us at 717-232-7093 or visit our website at www.ibewlocal143.org. We are the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 143, and we keep South Central Pennsylvania wired.
Always by your side. Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe lies again, because God is a Republican.
Yes, we need to privatize those prisons. We need more of them. It's a good thing. Profit. Lots of profit. Stronger laws. Three strikes and you're out, so we can have more prisoners. You know, we've got more prisoners per capita. We've got more prisoners in total numbers than any country in the world. More than China, more than Russia, more than Iran. That's something to be proud of. We're number one. Healthcare, not so much. Job creation, absolutely not. Standard of living, nope. Life expectancy, nope. Infant mortality rate, nope. You name it, nope, nope, nope. Education, higher education, nope, nope. But putting people in prison, that's something to be proud of. And you think about all the money that we waste on putting people in prison. About 40 grand a year per prisoner. That's a good idea. But we're going to deny them to go to college. We'll lock them up for 40 grand a year, but we don't want to educate them. No, because we need the business. It seems to be the only growth industry we have in this country since we've given most of our jobs away. And we can thank our friends on the conservative side of the aisle, Democrat or Republican, these free trade half-wits who, yeah, okay, go ahead, take it. We absolutely want you to have our industry. We absolutely want you to be the most powerful country in the world. We want the Chinese to be the most powerful. You know what's interesting to me? 110 years, we have been the number one country in value-added production until now. All indications are we're going to lose that title this year, and we're going to lose it to China. And what really ticks me off is they didn't take it from us. You know, at least in boxing, when a champion loses, the belt was taken from him. In this scenario, unless you're Roberto Duran, who, you know, no mas, said, go ahead, take whatever you want. I guess that's what we did. We're the Roberto Duran. Remember that fight?
Yes, I do.
No mas. We just gave our manufacturing base away. And why did we give it away? So that our investor class could have more money. CNN reported that Chinese President Hu Jintao, is that about right? Jintao?
I can't help you in that one, right?
Jintao?
I'm going to have to figure it out because we got to start learning to speak Chinese, folks. Anyway, he's topped the list of Forbes magazine's most powerful people in the world. He has beat President Obama by one spot, who, again, number two. The magazine said it used four criteria to define power. Whether the person has influence over a lot of people, which obviously Hugh has there. That's the largest population on Earth. Whether they have significant wealth compared to their peers. Yeah, I would say, you know, the communist dictator over there has a whole bunch of money. Oh, I'm sorry, he's not communist dictator. It's a communist country, yes. But whether they are powerful in more than one sphere, and whether they actively wield power. Yeah, that's what I want. I want the Chinese guy actively wielding power. In that respect, the magazine's editor said they picked Hugh as the most powerful man in the world. The annual list was released Wednesday evening. As the leader of China, Hugh presides over 1.3 billion people, one-fifth of the world's population, has the world's largest army. Hooray for him, and we're funding that. Under him, China has become the world's largest second economy. And, says Forbes, unlike Western counterparts, Hugh can divert rivers, build cities, jail dissidents, and censor internet without meddling from pesky bureaucrats and courts. Doesn't that make you feel real warm and fuzzy and safe inside? Hugh was number one. Obama was number two. Some Saudi king that I'm not going to even bother butchering his name, he was number three. Number four was Vladimir Putin. Five was Pope Benedict the 16th. Six was Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany. Seven was David Cameron, Prime Minister of the UK. Eight was Ben Bernanke, which is kind of an interesting choice there, that the chairman of the Federal Reserve is considered the eighth most powerful man in the world because he can jerk our chains any way he wants. And what's going to go on right now, and this has got to be frustrating to the Democrats, is he's going to pour $600 billion into the economy. Well, actually into the banking systems, in the hope that now that the Republicans are in control, the money will then flow from the banks like it should have for the last 2 years. And again, number four was Indian National Congress guy, whose last name's Gandhi, Sonia Gandhi. And, of course, Bill Gates wraps out rounds out the top ten. Osama bin Laden was 57. Mark Zuckerberg was 40. And the guy from WikiLeaks was 68. So interesting stuff. But, you know, you look at the Gates thing, the Bernanke thing, all the money that they're going to start pumping into the economy. And I'm saying right now, if we don't start seeing major, major job growth immediately, the Republicans are a failure. This whole Tea Party thing was an absolute failure. It was a sham. And I'm saying, look, we need to have job growth right now. Because, look, they're going to put $600 billion into the banking system. Corporate America is sitting on $1 trillion in cash. $1 trillion they're sitting on. There should be full employment within, realistically speaking, 6 months. If in 6 months the unemployment rate isn't about 5.5%, then this whole sham of a Tea Party movement, this whole sham of a Republican Party, is a failure. It's that simple, in my opinion.
AFL-CIO came out today, and the AFL's chief economist, Ron Blackwell, said this, which is very specifically relevant to what we're talking about. We're talking about the Federal Reserve with all this money they're throwing into Wall Street. It should buy infrastructure bonds from states, cities, as well as the National Infrastructure Bank to help finance the rebuilding of our nation's infrastructure. That would put Americans back to work right away, reduce our $2.2 trillion infrastructure deficit, increase potential long-term growth, and help restore our international competitiveness, which is exactly what you're talking about. But how much of that do we hear in Congress? Very little. Certainly not enough.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I'm telling you, we have got to hold these people to the fire. Got to hold their feet to the fire. Hold them accountable for what they ran on. What they ran on was that if we stopped with regulations, if we gave tax breaks to the billionaires, that jobs would be flowing. We would have full employment. And we need to hold them accountable for that. Simple, simple stuff. After Tuesday's massive whipping, and I got to tell you, it was a massive whipping for the Democrats. Republicans now control 190 congressional districts and will dominate the redrawing of congressional districts that begin next year. Think about this. Their early assessments are saying that we could see 15 to 25 seats just through the gerrymandering that is coming that will be Republican seats for the next 10 years that have been competitive in the past. And, you know, you look at some of this stuff's rigged. I am not thrilled about the direction that we're heading.
And in 2 years, the numbers I saw are considerably, at least in the Senate, there's quite a few more Democrats up than Republicans. So all this does not, long term, does not bode well for the Democrats. And isn't it ironic that 2 years ago, I mean, we were all optimistic. Took over the Congress, took over the Senate, the House. Things look rosy, and wow.
Well, they didn't do what they should have done.
That's right.
And the Republicans are not going to lose this opportunity.
There is frustration with Obama, but we certainly can't allow the Democrats off easy with criticism. There's as much, and in some instances, more frustration with the Democrats. Not just the president. I think the president, you know, has a good heart. His intentions were good. Some of the ways that he went about, for instance, in health care reform, we absolutely disagree with. But the Democrats who had the power, too often were bought off by the same corporate interests we complain about with the Republicans.
And that's what I said. In this election, the Wall Street won. They always win. They win every election because they can pull the strings. And this economy has been bad this long for one reason. Wall Street wanted it that way. The big corporations wanted it that way. They've been sitting on mountains of cash. Whereas in the past, it wasn't that way. And I blame that on the creation of a billionaire class. We need to have that great compression again. We need to have a time where we don't have this billionaire class anymore. Sorry, it is bad for democracy. It's absolutely bad for democracy to have a handful of people with so much influence. I mean, you look at the Koch brothers. These are guys who hold meetings with other billionaires to figure out how they're going to divvy up the country. How are we going to go after this lawmaker? Or how are we going to go after that lawmaker? How are we going to make them pay? And what was interesting about this election is Democrats who voted against unemployment benefits, a lot of them lost. Of the 11 Democrats, 7 of them are gone. To me, there's something interesting about that statement. And to be honest with you, a couple of them were probably seats they were going to lose anyway. But the fact that, you know, the 11 Democrats, 7 of them lost. And the ones that won were really, really conservative ones anyway. To me, I would say half of them are they're Republicans. They just happen to have a D behind their name. Heath Shuler, for instance.
Well, again, a lot of them were blue dogs. A lot of that was out of necessity. I'm not making excuses for them, but they were in swing districts, maybe slightly Republican, slightly Democrat, and they got slaughtered. If I could take a moment, you talked about corporations and banks being flushed with cash, and some of these banks and corporations actually were saved by the stimulus. According to a recent report by the Fed, they have about $1.8 trillion in cash and other reserves. Relative to their short-term liabilities, U.S. corporations haven't been this flush with cash since 1956. Cash is there.
Well, yeah, and what I'm saying is now, okay, you won. You got corporate America, you won. Wall Street, you won. Now start letting people get back to their lives. At some point, we're going to have to wake up in this country and realize that we're a fascist country. They're going to have to wake up and realize that corporate America controls what happens here because they can pull your strings. They can make your lives miserable. So, I mean, there's a part of me that says we ought to just throw in the towel right now. Let's, just admit it and say, you know what, we're a fascist nation. just take care of us in the working class. Now, my Tea Party friends, you know, they would disagree with that. But, you know, you look at some of these reports that have come out, and there's not much arguing. For instance, remember the whole net neutrality argument? All 95 people who signed the pledge to support net neutrality, every one of them lost. Every one of them. And to me, I think net neutrality is important. I think having equal access to the internet for everyone is absolutely imperative for one, for democracy, but two, for its success. But what we've just, I guess where we're deciding, and the Supreme Court's helping it out, is that we want Comcast to control what we get to see and hear, what we get to read. Because what's going to happen is you're going to have two separate internets. You're going to have the one, the AOL dial-up for you and me, and then you're going to have the Japanese, the South Korean high-speed internet for the very wealthy. That's what's coming if we don't do something about it. Right now, just about everybody has access. Rick Smith wants to throw up a YouTube video like we've got on our website at thericksmithshow.com. He can do that today. Once Comcast and a couple of the other big providers take over, he won't be able to do that anymore. You won't have the bandwidth. You won't have the access. You'll be stuck on dial-up. You'll be stuck on please hold. A lot of elevator music. But if Rick Smith had a lot of money, say, you know, a couple grand a month to buy into the good internet, to the corporate internet, it'd be instant. It'd be like watching TV. To me, that's another thing that's, I mean, the internet for me right now is fundamental. I mean, it's one of these things that we need. It's imperative to our democracy to be able to have the ability to have the free flow of information where at your fingertips you can find whatever you need. It's imperative. Oh, I went over my time again. Got to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this. Stick around.
To the Rick Smith Show.
Hello, I'm David Philman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are, not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing, so is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
The 19th century saw regular work weeks of 70 hours or more. Many attempts were made to get legislatures across the country to pass maximum hour laws limiting the number of hours an employee could be compelled to labor. The first union victory in capping work hours was won by the building trades in 1840. They won a 60-hour week. In 1874, the state of Massachusetts became the first to pass a law mandating a maximum hours for women. Other states followed as union activists around the country fought to pass laws to protect workers. Their work stalled in 1905 when the U.S. U.S. Supreme Court ruled the New York Bake Shop Act unconstitutional, citing a sacred bond between master and employee and the liberty of contract. With this decision, the Lochner error, named after bakery owner Joseph Lochner, who had been cited, tried, and convicted of working employees beyond the 60-hour limit, began. This single decision opened the floodgates, allowing attacks on child labor laws, minimum wage laws, as well as maximum hour laws by corporate and anti-union interests. Only after President Franklin Delano Roosevelt threatened to enlarge the United States Supreme Court from 9 to 13 did the court do an about-face with regard to liberty of contract and what has been called a switch in time to save 9, ruling in West Coast Hotel versus Parrish that Elsie Parrish was indeed entitled to the state of Washington's minimum wage, regardless of what conditions she agreed to, marking the end of the Lochner error. FDR's New Deal policies helped workers reclaim lost ground in their fight for the American dream. The proposal and passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, federally restricting weekly hours, mandating overtime pay, setting a minimum wage, and restricting the exploitative use of child labor was an essential step forward for workers, families, and communities. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com, where you can watch our live streaming video and participate. You can also email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com. The Inquirer, the Philly Inquirer, reports, on the day Pennsylvanians elected Republican Tom Corbett governor, his campaign logged 4 donations. 2 came from individuals, a third came from the state Republican Party, and the fourth, according to his campaign, was $1,000 from the natural gas driller Range Resources. For a candidate who has raised $30 million, that $1,000 from the Texas company was a drop in the bucket, says the Inquirer, but it underscored the role the natural gas industry played even at the closing moments. The gas firm, their employees, and others who stand to gain as Marcellus Shale drilling expands put more than $500,000 into Pennsylvania candidates' coffers since September, according to state records. Much of the money came from donations of the five-figure variety or greater. Most of it went to Republicans, no big surprise there. And all of it was perfectly legal, because here in the state of Pennsylvania, we don't think that contribution limits are a good thing. We want corporate America to spend as much money as possible. We want the natural gas people to spend $1 million on Corbett's campaign. Must be what we want. At the same time, driller lobbyists spent hundreds of thousands trying to shape the debate as lawmakers in Harrisburg weighed new taxes and regulations. First of all, they were able to walk away without being taxed for the Marcellus Shale, which Corbett is not going to enact, and the Republicans have done their best to beat back. The Democrats had a sane, rational plan, a very, very reasonable tax in line with the rest of the country. But that's not going to happen now, because you got a guy who's going to be sitting in the governor's chair who took $1 million from the natural gas industry. One check was for $100,000 from Lance Shaner. Lance is the newly appointed chief executive officer of Rex Energy. You know what Rex has? Rex Energy has 57 wells in the state of Pennsylvania, and they're looking to add a couple of more. Michael Radler, he is the chief executive at Chief Oil and Gas. He gave $15,000. His company, who has nearly 200 permits, gave Corbett $53,000. Another $50,000 came from Kentucky businessman Richard Corman, whose rail services he gets there at the drilling sites.
And the list goes on. You get people who all seem to be out of state. A guy who works for Frac Tech Solutions in Cisco, Texas, gave him 10 grand. And, you know, Scarnati ended up getting Senate President Pro Temp Joseph Scarnati got 100 grand from the natural gas industry. He's not up for re-election. He's not running for anything. Not for another 2 years. So I guess it's better to buy him early. Buy him off as early as possible. And what did Scarnati do with his money? Well, apparently he's going to try and be Pennsylvania's Tom DeLay. You know, he's the cash man. He gave Jim Colley, the new lieutenant governor, 50 grand. He gave State Senator Bob Mentz of Montgomery County, a Republican, 50 grand. He gave 280 grand to the Senate Republican Campaign Committee. Explain to me how it is that the guy who is the Senate pro temp, how he's got $380,000 at his disposal, according to Scarnati's top aide, Drew Compton. There's nothing improper with the GOP leader passing out contributions. Nothing at all. And according to the Inquirer article, Drew Compton dismissed as totally reprehensible any suggestion that the gas donations bought influence or access. Compton said Scarnati worked hard toward brokering a severance tax when some in the industry wanted no tax at all. And if you believe that,
no.
If you believe that, I have got a bridge for you. I have got some swampland in the Midwest for you. The natural gas industry spent $2.1 million lobbying in one quarter that ended in the quarter that ended October 1st. That's 3 months. They spent $2.1 million just on lobbying expenses. And the wonderful Marcellus Coalition, the Marcellus Shale Coalition, you know, the industry front group, they spent $305,000 lobbying between July and October. That was more than all but two of the 1,015 lobbyists who made their reports this past week. And, you know, you look at this money and you go, our politics are perverted by money. Because these guys, we give them so much power. We put them in the position where they can make multi-billion dollar decisions. And understand, that Marcellus Shale money, that's money that's coming out of our pockets. Because we're already paying the tax. It's already in their business plan. It's already in the price of the natural gas. We're already paying it. The difference is we're just not getting the benefit from it. Who's getting the benefit from it? Well, Scarnati got 100 grand. Had another 280 to pass out like, oh, I don't know. What do you call that? Begins with a B, ends with bribes. Oh, yeah, bribes. To me, that's what it is. You're buying their future votes. You're saying, hey, remember who got you elected? Remember who gave you an extra 50K? Remember that? Well, you need to come along with me, which is why I say we need to get some limits on where this money's coming from. We need to have some stronger disclosure of what these folks are doing. I'm telling you, the money is going to kill this system. We're going to take a quick break right here. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the midterm elections were about the economy, but was not an endorsement of right-wing policies.
It was a mandate to fix the economy and to create jobs. Here's what it wasn't. It wasn't a mandate for the policies most Republicans campaigned on. The election wasn't an endorsement of tax cuts for the wealthy or for undermining Social Security or the minimum wage. It wasn't the rejection of building a middle-class economy.
64% of union members voted for Democrats, according to AFL-CIO polls, while non-union working-class whites without college degrees voted by a 16-point margin for Republicans. The polls also showed that a large majority of these voters admitted that they didn't know what the Republican agenda is. OpenSecrets.org says corporations spent 74.2% of all the money spent on this election, swamping other spenders. Trumka vowed that the AFL-CIO would stay in the fight to improve workers' lives and would do so both in and outside of elections. The primary media narrative is that voters were seeking a more conservative agenda and therefore voted out Democrats in favor of Republicans. But is that true? Jesse Russell crunches the numbers.
If one looks at the Democratic losses by ideological caucus, a different trend seems to emerge. The Congressional Progressive Caucus only lost 3 of the 72 progressive seats that were up for grabs. Meanwhile, the moderate New Democrats coalition had 45 New Democrats-only seats up for grabs. They lost 15 of those seats. And the worst performing of election night was the conservative Blue Dog coalition, which had 29 seats up for grabs. They lost 13. The current House of Representatives Democrat makeup is 30% progressive versus 39% moderate and conservative Democrats. If the next session of Congress were to begin today, the Democrat composition would be 38% progressives and 28% moderates and conservatives.
The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says the union narrowly lost an election at the merged Delta Airlines to represent some 20,000 flight attendants. That vote was 9,216 for and 9,544 against. It means Northwest Airlines flight attendants, who are now part of the merged Delta, will lose their union representation after 63 years. But AFACWA says there was intimidation and interference in the election from Delta management, and they're taking those complaints to the National Mediation Board in an effort to get a fair election free of management intimidation. Private employers added 43,000 jobs in October, still not the type of job creation needed to keep pace with those entering the job market, but better than economists had projected. Those numbers come from payroll company ADP. The overall pace of downsizing is also down, dropping 62% from the same time last year. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Don't have a phone? Email Rick at rick@therickssmithshow.com. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Nobody never got nothing that didn't raise a voice and push. Like the steel worker in Ohio, the miner in West Virginia, the teacher in Chicago, janitor in Mississippi. From the sweatshops of L.A. to the fields of Mission Flats, there's a thundercloud exploding, and I'm free at last. Like Joe Hill and Cesar Chavez, who fought in their own time. Like our brothers and our sisters up and down that picket line. Like the unnamed and unnumbered who struggle brave and long. Like the union men and women standing up and standing strong. Like the unnamed and unnumbered who struggle brave and long. Like the union men and women standing up and standing strong.
Well, the question is, what happens when you stand up? What happens when you fight for your rights, but they're denied? What happens when you try to organize, as is the case with our attendants at Northwest Airlines? What happens when you have a union and another company buys you, like Delta did?
And Delta, being a vehemently anti-union company, decides, you know what? We're going to add everybody together, have a vote, and we're going to make sure that you lose your rights, which is what's happened. Press release came out. Northwest flight attendants, who have been represented by the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, were informed by the National Mediation Board that their collective bargaining rights that they've fought to maintain for 63 years will soon be extinguished. Patricia Friend, AFA CWA International President, issued the following statement after the vote count. We are extremely disappointed that once again Delta management overwhelmed flight attendants with heavy-handed intimidation and coercion of voters. They stopped at nothing to keep Delta flight attendants from gaining a voice and advancing their profession. And, you know, I look at this, and it's, again, you know, the union's going to go, and they're going to, they're going to go through the channels. They're going to go through the courts. They're going to go through the channels that they can. At the end, it's the workers who are going to get screwed in this. And the company, whatever they did to get away with it, they're going to walk away scot-free. This is why I keep saying we need labor law reform in the worst possible way. But my fear is now that we have people who, and look, I wish there were Republicans that I could support on the labor front. I wish there were, because it would add to the debate. Right now, the problem is the parties have polarized. I hate the fact that the Democrats are my last, best, and only hope, because they haven't been the party of strength. And I'm hoping that this teaches them, although I'm kind of wondering if it will, but I'm hoping it will. I'm hoping this teaches them that who their supporters truly are, people like you and me, Jake, people who work for a living. And that they got to get out there, and they've got to stand up for those people. And I look at this as just, you know, it's absolutely shameful, just shameful.
That's, tragic. However, there, you talk about airline employees. Piedmont recently had an election. The Piedmont Flight and Passenger Service Agents, 3,000. Now, here's the good thing. They recently changed because of the Obama administration and the pro-union position that the Obama administration has already taken a whole wide range of fronts. They changed the rules in union elections for this industry. And we talked about this before. A no vote, a non-vote was a no vote. Out of 3,000, about 1,800 of these people voted. Well, you do the numbers, that would have been automatically 1,200 no votes, plus the 600 would have far surpassed the 1,170 that voted yes. So now, because of the change by the Obama administration, you have a union for these service agents at Piedmont. Big victory, actually.
Well, again, it comes back down to the fact that, and as you pointed out, that in the past, 1,200 votes would have almost precluded them from winning. Anyway, Delta's going to the count that they had 20,000 flight attendants and they lost by 328 votes. So, you know, you look at what the newspapers were saying. Newspapers are saying, well, you know, employees reject unions. You know, employees threw out the union. No, actually they didn't. 328 votes, that is not a huge victory. And what's kind of interesting to me is that there's no repercussion when Delta bought Northwest and basically took the rights away from the workers that had been there. And they're doing it, you know, in other parts of the business as well. December 7th, there's going to be an election for 16,000 customer service agents and another 14,000 baggage handlers. So I'm kind of waiting to see what happens with this because it's amazing stuff. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Rick on line one. How are we doing tonight, Rick?
Not that bad. How are you doing, you and Jake? Good?
Good, good, good.
Hey, I guess it's kind of tough when I look at the way the Republicans treat us, we Democrats, and the way we treat them, you know. In the best case scenario, I think that people want to be good and feel good about what they do. I think the Republicans, however, the way they their scorched earth way of looking at things. It's like when I was in the car business, the guy told me, hey, look, somebody walks in the lot and he's the staff, get his money. Because, you know, he's going to be the same staff if he goes two dealerships down. And what are you here for? If he's here, you might as well be the guy getting his money. He's going to give it to somebody. So I think for them, the ends justify the means. But we try to take the high road. In fact, when I first started, I called up a friend of mine who happened to be a lawyer, and I said, hey, I don't understand what's going on here. You know, I'm really nice to these people. I tell them all about the car features. I give them my bottom line, and they never buy anything from me. You know, I was taking the high road. And he said, well, he told me, kid, he said, three people nobody trusts, doctors, lawyers, and used car sales in that order. So I started having to be a little bit creative to move some iron. But, you know, you don't take a knife to a gunfight. Do we Democrats have to stoop to their level to get anything done? And evidently, you know, they know what they put their scare tactics and everything else out there, that it's going to work. I mean, I think Obama's trying to take the high road, but will the high road work? You know, what do we do? I don't know. Do we do what they do or what?
Well, we are definitely going to find out what kind of a person he is. We're going to see if he's got what it takes to reach down and fight the fight. You know, does he have it in him? I don't know. And I've got to be honest, I'm anxiously waiting to see how this turns out, because I think what happens in the next 6 months is going to dictate whether he's reelectable.
Hopefully, they'll use this bully pulpit and just figure, hey, if I'm not, you know, what a decision they have to make. Do I just go ahead and let everybody have it? And maybe they won't. No one else will want to vote for me again and do what I can while I'm still here. You know, and of course, on the Republican side, they're trying to build for 2012 right now, so they don't want to make it look like it's any victory. Now they're really going to go ahead with their obstructionist tactics. Is it too late? The Democrats have done something while they had the power, instead of trying to be negotiators. So they have rammed everything down into the Republican throat the way they did to us for the last, 8 years of the Bush administration. I don't know.
Well, that's what I said we should have been doing. Look, you know, you take the mandate that you got, and in 2008, people wanted health care. You've got to make people's lives better. They've got to see something. They've got to see something almost immediately. That's the kind of world we live in. Everything's so quick. Everything's so convenient. People need to see their lives better. This health care bill, they needed to see almost immediately that it was making their lives better, and it was worth all of the time we spent on it. And unfortunately, I don't think it has been seen that way.
Yeah, I agree. And I think maybe the question is, you know, do we continue to bring a knife to a gunfight? You know, those guys will say anything, do anything, funded by big business, scare tactics, don't know the sky's falling, you know, Roe-driven baloney. And they get these people who don't want to look any further than the length of their arm. Says, oh, no, the sky is falling. Do we fight fire with fire? I mean, do we take the high road, or do we you know, let them have it in trench warfare? I don't know. That's the $64,000 question. Will that turn people off if we stoop to their, you know, moderates, people in the middle? Will that hurt us too much if we decide to take that tack? I don't know. That's the big question for me anyway.
Well, we will definitely see.
Right. All right. Hey, well, thanks, Rick.
Thanks for calling, Rick.
Let's take a quick break. 1-888-520 Rick. We're right back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Don't cry for Jamie Dimon, America. As CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, this ruling mogul of Wall Street must now cope with a recently enacted financial reform bill, which imposes a host of new regulations meant to rein in the rip-off frauds and other excesses of Wall Street bankers. Republican lawmakers, however, are crying that the Democrats' reform bill puts a crushing burden on the poor financial giants. While these Wall Street apologists wail and keen, slick operators like Dimon are wasting no time on tears. Instead, they're devising ways to slip out of the new regulatory reins. For example, the law limits the outrageous overdraft fees that banks have been sneaking onto our debit card accounts. No problem, the giants are quietly imposing new maintenance fees for basic checking accounts. Forget receiving a free toaster when you open an account. Banks now hit you with up to $15 a month just for the privilege of putting your money in their bank. Diamond insists that this is necessary. Quote, if you're a restaurant and you can't charge for the soda, you're going to charge more for the burger, he lectures. Come on, Jamie, drop the mom-and-pop pose. You're not a little restaurant struggling to make ends meet. You head a monopolistic financial behemoth that helped ruin the economy for America's moms and pops, then took billions in taxpayer bailouts, used the crisis to increase its monopoly power, continues to get federally subsidized money, just announced a 78% hike in profits, and recently paid you a salary and bonus of $18 million. This is Jim Hightower saying, the diamonds of Wall Street keep picking our pockets because they believe they're entitled to excessive profits and paychecks. To help bring these greed heads down to earth, visit Americans for Financial Reform. Find them at www.ourfinancialsecurity.org.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds small. Don't you know?
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show. Progressive talk with a conscience.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Research shows, according to the Raw Story, research shows generous social security systems are more effective than criminalizing addicts. You know, I've talked about for a while that, you know, when conservative governments take power, you see alcoholism rise, you see all of the negative things of society rise, divorce, suicide, you see all that stuff rise. And what this report is saying is, you know, if we reduce the use of drugs, the best way to do it would be by having a bigger welfare state rather than criminalizing what these people are doing. Because, you know, at some point, wouldn't it be better to spend $40,000 helping someone to get clean, find a job, find a living, than to spend $40,000 to, oh, I don't know, put them behind bars and make them criminals for life? Because, look, if your addiction ends you up in prison, you are now a criminal for life. There's no beating that. You are a criminal for life. That stamp is with you. That mark is with you till the day you die. So you're not going to get a crack at the best jobs. You're not going to get a crack at getting into the places that are going to help further your life and pull you into a reasonable standard of living. The work published today shows countries that provide generous social security systems have low levels of injecting drug use, irrespective of how punitive the drug policies are. Charities have used the study to argue that government's welfare cuts will see a rise in drug addiction. And, you know, I've been saying this for a while. You know, if we go through and we make desperate people do desperate things. And if you put folks in a position where now they're hopeless, now they're in despair, now they don't see a bright or even a future, they're going to turn to what dulls that pain. And earlier today, you know, I was talking with my chief executive over here, our number one producer, and I was saying, you know, look, you know, during the 60s, we were just handing out Valium like it was candy because women were trying to escape. You know, and you know, when times are bad, when times are tough, people look for that out. And this study kind of bears that out. And what bothers me is while the conservatives are going to be taking power, we're going to see deep, wide, and painful cuts. We're going to see, really, if they hold to their word, if they hold to what they said they were going to do, we're going to see a lot of pain for folks.
We're going to see painful cuts in social programs. So will we see a rise in criminal activity? Will we see a rise in people being locked up? I hope not. Which is why I've always said the best thing we can do is have a workfare program. I'm not a big fan of handing out money to people for not doing anything. I think there are therapeutic qualities to work, and I think there's a therapeutic quality to, at the end of the week, saying, I'm satisfied, I can support my family. That kind of a policy will alleviate many of our problems. Now, look, you know, I'll be honest. I grew up in a pretty crummy neighborhood. Most of my friends, they turned to crime. They didn't have opportunity. And that was a failure of our society, not a failure of theirs. And we like to say, well, you know, they just weren't strong enough, or they weren't smart enough, or they didn't want to work hard. Nonsense. They weren't given the opportunity. And I'm saying what we need to do is we need to make sure that that opportunity is there for everyone, even if our government has to be the employer of last resort. And I've said that a number of times, and people, well, what's that mean? That means we have our government through us, instead of paying welfare for people to sit home and be unproductive, we say every day you've got to get up and you've got to do something. There's a lot of work that needs to be done in our community. There are a lot of senior citizens who need help. There are a lot of things that are being undone, that are not being done. We can easily find productive, fulfilling work for every person in this country. There should be no idle hands. Or am I wrong about this?
No, I don't think you are. So your concept, just to get this straight, your concept is to keep that locally. You're not really, CC projects would be, programs would be at a different level. There you're talking about something a little more massive.
Well, there's a lot of things you can do. Look, even the CC programs were local projects in every area. The federal government can say, look, we want to build parks. So on the state level, you figure out how you get that done. We're going to allocate some money. We're going to make sure that – and there's no more welfare. So the states are responsible for welfare. We're TANF right now, Temporary Aid to Needy Families. You do away with that. And you say, on Monday, you're going to show up, and we're going to give you something to do. And it's going to be a massive shift, and there's going to be a lot of adjustments. But that, I think, is what we have to do. Because then it takes away the whole conservative frame that they're just people sitting at home. And even if it is a crappy existence, and look, I'll tell you, it is a crummy existence.
Okay, one question. Wouldn't we have to be careful that we don't, in fact, replace legitimate workers in some of the industries?
Look, there is so much work that has not been done. The cash for caulkers thing, for instance, that they tried to unfurl. They tried to get, you know, money out there so people would caulk people's homes and do some of the work around the house for seniors that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. That is a place where there is massive opportunities. Anybody can lay a bead of caulk. Anybody can put plastic over a window. Just go sit and talk to somebody. I mean, you know, like Bush said, you know, and he was mocked for it because it was dumb how he said it. But be part of the community. Is it that hard to have someone who they're responsible for a couple of senior citizens to make sure that they're being fed, to make sure that things are going right? To me, it's a whole community thing. I see opportunity there. Or, you know what? There are a lot of houses that need to be painted. Here's a brush. Get some paint. Put people to work. Because I do believe there's a therapeutic quality in them. I've said it before. At the end of the day, you got a little sweat on your brow. You got to go home and take a shower. There's a sense of accomplishment.
It's a sense of self-worth.
And once you have that, you're going to want more, and you're going to want to move on. And you're going to have the skills. Because, look, not everybody has the skills to show up to work every day. We may think that that's a simple concept, that being on time is a skill that everybody has. It's not. Being responsible is a skill that everyone has. It's not.
Teaches you responsibility. That's a good point.
And, you know, we can have this conversation. And, you know, I'll be honest. When I was a younger kid, it took living in the middle class world to learn some of these skills. And there are middle class skill sets that some people just never acquire. For instance, I got to be honest. There are some poverty skill sets that most of us don't have. How would you get by on less than minimum wage? How would you get by on substandard wages? How would you be able to feed your kids and make sure you had all the services that you need and you know, going through some of the programs that our government has? How would you navigate that? Most middle class people don't have a clue. But what I'm saying, again, and I don't want to get too far off the beaten path here, I do believe, though, that welfare should not exist. Handout programs should never exist. Work programs. When I worked at the Red Cross in Cleveland back in the, I guess it was late 80s, early 90s, they would put you up. But they sent, because we used to take families. If you came to the Cleveland area and you were stranded, they would put you in a place, and then they would send the mail, and again, this is really sexist, but they would send the mail to a temp agency, and you'd get a day's work, and at the end of the day, they paid you cash, but you had to go do something. And I thought that was a great idea, because you just didn't have people who were freeloading. These were people who actually, you know, they were in trouble, they were having a problem, and you gave them help, but they felt some dignity that they were helping themselves. And part of it, and you know, I think I've told this story before, that the first time I used a food stamp, I mean, I was totally degraded by it. I was only a small kid, seven, eight years old, if I remember right. But I still remember that woman behind the counter taking that piece of paper and in the most ridiculing, humiliating way, running me through the paces. And I'll never forget that humiliation. But it's something, I got to be honest, that stuck with me. Now, had I gone the other way and swallowed my pride and just said, well, this is just how it is, and been forced into that situation, it could have been much worse. And I think once you give people the ability to have some self-worth, some dignity, some respect, I think things change. I think the problem is we've had handout programs for so long that folks don't understand that self-respect, that dignity.
But yet when you relate that to perhaps projects similar to, you know, CC and all that, the conservatives are dead set. The Republicans, for the most part, are dead set.
Because they're not profiting from it.
Because it's, right, it's not the private sector, quote, the classic private sector, but yet those programs were absolutely very, very successful. Very successful to this day.
I mean, there's still infrastructure that I've seen that we are still benefiting from, mm-hmm, because we invested in it. I mean, this idea that the private sector is always going to take care of our needs is ridiculous, because there are things that aren't profitable that society needs.
I knew a man, he's probably now in his late 70s, I met him when I was involved in a political party work, and he said the reason he was a Democrat, and he became a very successful entrepreneur and businessman, he said the reason he's a Democrat is because during the Great Depression, they taught him a craft that made him a good living later on in life. Said he never forgot that.
Which is why I got to be honest, I'm in favor of some form of conscription. I think some form of public service for a year is not a bad thing. Now, I'm not talking about military.
Kind of like an American Peace Corps within America, so to speak. Is that a good comparison?
But some type of service to your country. I mean, you look at what happened after 9/11. What were we asked to do? What, as a country, what were we asked to sacrifice? Nothing. In fact, we were given handouts to go be irresponsible.
You know, we talk about it, but every now and then PCN, I don't know, I don't think you have PCN.
We don't have it.
But I do. It's a great channel. And every now and then they get these old films, and I've seen films of the, you know, CCC camps. They were very basic. I mean, they gave you food, they gave you lodging, but it was very basic. Nothing wrong with that, but they did some very good things, and it taught you hard work, taught you discipline. And in some cases, like my friend that became a very successful entrepreneur, it gave you a skill that you could utilize later on in life.
I mean, even something as simple as watching your neighbor's kids. I mean, you know, you say, okay, well, you've got, let's say you got 20 women with children. Because most of the people who are on TANF are women who the men who have abandoned them and aren't paying child support. I mean, really honestly and truthfully, that's the big part of poverty. You have women with children who the men have walked away from, which I'm in favor of going after them and making sure that they pay. But here's the thing. If you got 10 women in a community that they don't have child care, because child care, I don't know if you've noticed, really expensive. So you have one or two of them whose job it is to watch the other's kids.
Or perhaps give her a blow for an hour or so where she can go.
Simple.
She can go perhaps get groceries or whatever. You know, that does make sense.
Simple stuff. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Rick.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Hello, I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. Right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are, not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing. So is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
Officially in love with Michelle Bachmann. Even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith.
Well, you know, that's, I got to be honest. You know, the whole crazy thing is what I like about her.
Yeah.
1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Michelle Bachmann was being interviewed by Chris Matthews on election night. And you got to love this. And I'm going to play this clip real quick.
Are you hypnotized tonight? Has someone hypnotized you? Because no matter what I ask you, you give the same answer. Are you hypnotized? Has someone put you under a trance tonight? Did you give me the same answer no matter what question I put to you?
I think the American people are the ones that finally are speaking tonight. We're coming out of our trance. Really, we're coming out of our nightmare.
Okay,
so
well...
I think people are thrilled tonight.
So basically, I mean, but look, the honest truth of it is you ask any of the Tea Party people, you got canned answer. You got talking points. You know, there was really no thought. You couldn't have an actual conversation. I don't think you can. I think she's a robot, actually. You know, maybe just, you know, a Martian from Xenon or something. I don't know, but.
Xenon?
Yeah.
Is that a side of Venus or? You're not quite sure.
I think it's just above Piat.
Oh, okay.
amazing stuff. Christine O'Donnell actually said something I do agree with. And it's weird that I would find something I agree with Christine O'Donnell on.
Solidarity goes a long way.
She said solidarity.
Solidarity goes a long way.
Solidarity goes a long way. We need to chop that clip a little better. I do agree with that. I think solidarity does go a long way. What she was talking about is she was saying that the Republicans were unified against her. I think she better get some couch time that the world's against me. No, you're crazy. That's why the world was against you. They didn't want you in the Senate. Everyone but me. I wanted you there. Because I think it would have been an absolute freak show. We could have sold tickets for people to watch.
Well, Rick, I think enough of them made it to Congress that, trust me, you'll be entertained the next 2 years.
Yeah, I'm going to love watching Aqua Buddha. Yeah, that's going to be. I wonder who he'll hold hostage there and make worship the Aqua Buddha. But, you know, here again, you know, Mitch McConnell.
Political priority over the next 2 years should be to deny President Obama a second term.
Yep, their political priority. Oh, yep. At least they're honest. At least they're honest.
Actually, I don't think those two are friends. They, from what I remember, there's a little bit of a rivalry there. Perhaps a little jealous. Aqua Buddha and McConnell.
Oh, I doubt it. Because he did say he wasn't sure he was going to vote for him for majority leader. So that'll be another understory. See how that works out. Think Progress had a good point. They write, one of the results of Tuesday's Republican takeover of the House of Representatives is the future installation of new chairmen in the chamber's various committees. And this is something that we talked a little bit about last night. You know, who's going to be in charge of the different committees and, you know, what gets through. Think Progress goes on to say, while none of the upcoming chairmen are set in stone, members have to run and be elected to chair committees. It is generally true that ranking members of these committees are more likely to take over. So they looked at the House Appropriations Subcommittee on Defense. Chairman Bill Young is the person that they're saying is the top guy. And he's a guy who's got a big pack. And over the past two election cycles, the list of defense contractors who have given him money, almost $33,000 from Raytheon, $25,000 from General Dynamics, and Lockheed Martin, $20,000 from Boeing and Honeywell. Here's a guy who he's going to be in charge of overseeing the money that goes to the defense industry, yet they've got him heavily in his back pocket. This is what I'm talking about the money. It is about the money. And, you know, you can say I'm tired of hearing about it, but this is the problem. Like the Armed Services Committee chairman, chances are it's going to be a guy named Howard McKeon. He's taken a boatload of cash from the defense industry. $40,000 from General Atomics, $34,000 from Lockheed Martin, $32,000 from Northrop Grumman. Lots and lots of cash. The one that bothers me is the guy who could be the head of the Financial Services Committee. This Spencer Baucus from Alabama. And, you know, I got to tell you, when I think financial services, Alabama is the first place that I think of. Because they've done such a great job of keeping their economy going and prospering. One of the poorest states in the country. But he's gotten, what is it, $80,000 between Bank of America and Wells Fargo. He's one of the guys who says that Democrats hammered the financial industry because he doesn't want any oversight. He doesn't want regulation. And you can go down the list, you can go down the list of these chairmanships. And my fear is that these folks are so in bed with the industries that they're supposed to be overseeing that it's going to be a return to the Bush years, where they're literally, you know, like Mineral Management Service, they're literally in bed with the people that they're supposed to be overseeing.
I'm afraid you're accurate. I'm afraid that's gonna be the truth in the situation, and that is scary. That does not bode well for this country in the next 2 years.
And my favorite one is still Joe Barton, the guy who's supposed to oversee energy and commerce. This is the guy who, while oil is spewing into the Gulf, is apologizing and telling Tony Hayward, "Oh, I'm sorry, you're being shook down. I'm sorry that we're asking you to pay for what you've destroyed. Oh, I'm so sorry." And he could be the guy overseeing the energy committee.
I can imagine some of these committees. I can imagine some of the fights we're going to get into. We're going to find out what these remaining Democrats are made of. I have a feeling that a lot of them are going to just draw a line in the sand and say enough is enough. And they should. If I was a Democratic Party, every time the Republicans came at us, came at working people, came at unions, didn't think what they disagreed with, that they make sure that the American people know. They haven't done a good job the last 2 years. I mean, and we repeat that over and over. But one of the major mistakes of the party, they allowed the Republicans. It's amazing. The Republicans were in the minority, but yet all too often they dictated the conversation.
Well, I think it's, as Rick Santorum said, they've got Fox News. They've got the bigger megaphone. They may not have had the money, but they had the megaphone. They had the infrastructure that corporate America handed to them. As long as they were singing to the choir, as long as they were singing off the corporate songbook, they were allowed to sing. And that's something that we have to talk about as well, but it's never going to change. It's not going to change anytime soon. If anything, we will see more media consolidation. We'll see more of the message being consolidated. And, you know, I've got friends who, they tell me, "Oh, I listen to Glenn Beck, and Glenn Beck's this great, you know, blah, blah, blah." I'm going, who do you think pays his salary? He's bought and paid for by corporate America. He can be as crazy as he wants on some issues. But at the end of the day, he's got to be singing that anti-government song. Because if not, they pull the plug on him. To me, it's very clear. The answers are very clear. Corporate America is not, they're not our friend. The International Chamber of Commerce is not our friend. They're not the small chamber of commerce who plants flowers in town square. They're not the local chamber of commerce who holds Friday evening shop fests where they have little doodads on the sidewalk. That's not the chamber of commerce that is destroying this country. You know, I'm in favor of the people who want to spruce up the Main Street and who want to do things to get customers to come down to the shops on Main Street. I'm all in favor of that. But when you start talking about the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the International Chamber of Commerce, who are holding meetings on how you can move your company overseas and holding meetings and you can partner with foreign corporations to move jobs, I got a problem with that. That's not your local chamber. These are corporatists. And capitalism is nowhere near what they do. They are monopolistic. That is not what capitalism is supposed to be. In the model sense, when you have these little models, and I've said it before, you know, every football play I ever drew up scored a touchdown. Every basketball diagram I ever made up, you know, scored the winning basket. Every hockey play scored the winning goal. Every one. Everything was perfect on paper. It all worked all nice and neat, and everybody did what I wanted them to do, and it was perfect. And with any of these economic models, it's the same way. Everything is perfect on paper. But in practice, much different. It's great to say, you know what, I want competition. I want competition. Competition's good. But at the end, there are winners and losers. And the winners eventually take over. Eventually, you have a champion, don't you? At the end of the football season, there's a Super Bowl champion. At the end of baseball, someone won the World Series. At the end of the game, there is a winner. And that's the person who grew the biggest, the fastest, the longest. The monopolies, which is why I've said we need to have a trust buster. We need someone to break up these international cartels that we're calling corporations. We need to do something on trade so that foreign corporations can't continue to dump on our shores, making our products uncompetitive. And I don't think our Tea Party friends are going to do this. I don't think the new folks, I don't think the new folks are going to do it. You know, I think of the Who song. You know, won't get fooled again. Want to bet? This is the same. This is the new boss, the same as the old boss. And I think the Tea Party, I think they're in for an interesting couple months. Let's take a quick break. We're right back after this to wrap things up.
Values are more than slogans. The Rick Smith Show.
The 19th century saw regular work weeks of 70 hours or more. Many attempts were made to get legislatures across the country to pass maximum hour laws limiting the number of hours an employee could be compelled to labor. The first union victory in capping work hours was won by the building trades in 1840. They won a 60-hour week. In 1874, the state of Massachusetts became the first to pass a law mandating a maximum hours for women. Other states followed as union activists around the country fought to pass laws to protect workers. Their work stalled in 1905 when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the New York Bake Shop Act unconstitutional, citing a sacred bond between master and employee and the liberty of contract. With this decision, the Lochner era, named after bakery owner Joseph Lochner, who had been cited, tried, and convicted of working employees beyond the 60-hour limit, began. This single decision opened the floodgates, allowing attacks on child labor laws, minimum wage laws, as well as maximum hour laws by corporate and anti-union interests. Only after President Franklin Delano Roosevelt threatened to enlarge the United States Supreme Court from 9 to 13 did the court do an about-face with regard to liberty of contract and what has been called a switch in time to save 9, ruling in West Coast Hotel versus Parrish that Elsie Parrish was indeed entitled to the state of Washington's minimum wage, regardless of what conditions she agreed to, marking the end of the Lochner era. FDR's New Deal policies helped workers reclaim lost ground in their fight for the American dream. The proposal and passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, federally restricting weekly hours, mandating overtime pay, setting a minimum wage, and restricting the exploitive use of child labor, was an essential step forward for workers, families, and communities. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center of IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
During the break, I was taking a look at the mail online. It's a UK news service, and they're talking about Las Vegas and how there are at least 1,000 people who live in the tunnels underground the city. And you know, a ton of pictures there where, you know, people have made makeshift beds and their makeshift kind of little apartments and stuff where folks have made an existence for themselves. It's amazing stuff, but is this what our big cities are turning into? Major homelessness. You know, right here in our community, there are a couple of homeless shelters who do fantastic work, but as we keep going and things keep turning south, you gotta wonder, in Las Vegas, this is amazing. I mean, some of these pictures are just absolutely, absolutely amazing. It's a shame in this country, but especially in a place like Las Vegas that is so wealthy, where there's so much money going through. I guess part of the reason they're underground is, well, you can't have those people being seen. It's for tourism. Bad for business. Ah, amazing stuff. Amazing, amazing stuff. Anyway, have you been following the Tom DeLay thing? Tom DeLay says he wants to be more involved in politics when his ongoing corruption trial ends, according to Andy Barr. You know, Tom DeLay told the American Statesman. It's an Austin newspaper. I haven't left the scene. I would have liked to have been there and been the leader of in this election. I'm sure you would. I'm sure you wouldn't be thrilled about standing trial for corruption and for money laundering and the things that you're doing or that you had done. What I think is interesting, he wants to be more involved. I wonder if when he goes to prison, if there's something he can become politically active in. Oh, I don't know, something like making sure that that condoms are handed out. You need to make sure that you know people are practicing safely. Anyway, he says, once I get the trial off my back, I don't know that the trial on your back is anything you have to worry about. He says, I'll be more involved. So the hammer thinks he's going to get off. He says, never has there been such a rejection of a president's agenda. Again, I don't know that it was a rejection of the president's agenda. I think it didn't go far enough. I think, like Alan Grayson said, look, people just didn't view the Democrats as someone who would fight for them. And when people don't see that, they tend to not be enthused. So that enthusiasm gap that everybody keeps talking about turned into a voter gap. And, yes, if you don't have people coming to the polls, you are going to lose, especially like Grayson, because he was not in a liberal district. And I got to be honest, he was one of the really way out there characters. I liked him. Thought he was interesting.
Oh, I love the clips that I think we might have even played where he and you've used the same phrase, you know, pay or die. And I remember him shouting, literally shouting on the floor of the house. And you know, I have nothing but respect for people like that. They drew the line in the sand and they didn't care if the Republicans liked what he was saying or not. I mean, they said they stood up for what they thought was right. Actually, we need more Democrats like Alan Grayson.
Yep. Bloomberg reported today that Republican leaning outside groups, not the party, just people who spent a lot of money on attack ads, like Karl Rove's American Crossroads and the Chamber of Commerce, the International Chamber of Commerce, spent $167 million on the U.S. elections. And came out on the winning side almost twice as many races as they lost. So in the races that they chose to spend money on, they did real well. We talked about that last night. Mm-hmm. The New York Times notes that these outside groups helped offset cash advantages held by Democratic incumbents. So what happened was is you saw a lot of corporate money flowing into this. And what bothers me is you don't know who that American Crossroads money is. You have no idea. They don't have to disclose it. And this is where the Citizens United case has really jumped up and bitten this country in the behind, which is why I'm in favor of Peter DeFazio going after Judge Roberts. There should be some type of a recall, some type of – there's got to be something. You cannot in your testimony say without fact I'm going to side with decided law – and then come out with a decision like this. And look, I'm generally not someone who says we should impeach anyone or go after recall or throw people out of office. That's what the voting is for. But in this, you gotta have some recourse.
No, I haven't heard anything about that in the news media at all. Not one iota. Not one story. That's kind of a low key thing. You know, I hope it becomes eventuality. I mean, you look at that whole situation, those last two Supreme Court appointees. I mean, do you think they lied a little bit under oath? Well, of course they did.
Well, yeah, where's the balls and strike thing?
We're strict constructionists. Yeah. We don't want, and don't you just have these conservatives? Well, we don't want activist judges. Act judges.
Yeah, they're activist judges when they do things that they don't want, but things like this that they do want, oh, they're just...
Well, that's good activism.
That's your good activism, yeah.
They broke it down even further.
But what's interesting, and you know, there have been a couple of studies that I've read recently that shows how the Chamber of Commerce has been doing much better in front of the Supreme Court because you're buying and selling it now. Mm. And this is what, again, you go back to the money in the system. You go back to money controlling the country. And this is where I say our education system needs to improve on critical thinking. You know, I look at all of these attack ads. I look at the number of them, the absolute, just the assault, the barrage of ads by Corbett and Toomey. That turns me off. That tells me that, man, they're compensating for something, because it was just constant. It was merciless. It was just an absolute assault on your mind. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. Every time I would go to a website, there was Pat Toomey. Every time I would turn on the TV, there was Tom Corbett. You couldn't get away from it.
With Pat Toomey, I mean, you have to come to the conclusion at the end of the day. You know, his resources just overwhelmed Sestak. I think Sestak had the better ground game. Sestak was tireless. But, you know, at some point, if the money difference is so overwhelming, you can't overcome that. And that's a shame. That's not only a shame, that's a direct assault on our democracy. I think in this Congress, or certainly in the next two Congresses, this Congress, they have to look at some of these problems. If we're really serious about maintaining our democracy, and if we're serious about giving the next generation a reasonable chance to have a good life, we better start addressing these problems, because these are serious, serious assaults on the future of this country.
I absolutely agree. Got an email from Rick during the break. Again, you can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. He's talking about Tom DeLay. Says Tom's going to go to prison at tight end. And I guess, you know, football terms.
Ooh.
He's going to come out a receiver, I guess. So,
Robin, he is a good dancer. I saw him in Dancing in the Stars.
He's going to be doing a lot of dancing once he goes to prison. Go ahead, Tommy. Well, put on the dress for
by
us.
By the way, how many counts was he accused of?
Just one.
Just one?
Yeah. They're saying he took $190,000 from corporate interest, and he spread out $190,000. You know, at least maybe make it $160,000 or $200,000. You know, like I tell my kids, if you're going to do something, at least try to cover your tracks. Try not to be so obvious.
Oh. Teach you how to be dishonest, are you?
Well, you know, look, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to learn a couple of lessons. If you're going to do something, make sure you're the only one who knows you're doing it. Don't go and tell your little brother, because your little brother is going to come and tell me. The other part of it is, if I ask you about it, be honest about it. Fess up, say, yep, you're right, I did it. Because one, I'm going to believe you in the future. And two, you're not going to get as much of a punishment as if I'm going to have to drag it out of you. It's the same thing here. You say, okay, you know, I screwed up. But in this case, I've never really hoped for people to go to jail. He's one guy I would like to see.
Actually, isn't he? I mean, I remember that time. And all the charges he was accused of, I think he's you know, he's probably lucky to only being charged with one thing. I mean, if I remember, there were charges of just massive, massive violations of the law.
I'm hoping he goes. I'm hoping they give him a nice striped suit. Hope they put him in a nice gray cell with a nice slamming door, and give him a little tin cup so he can sing "Nobody Knows."
And then we wonder why Texas is overwhelmingly Republican, because of guys like him.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's the hammer. What a great night. Thank you. I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. Remember, check out our website at therickssmithshow.com. If you missed any part of the show, it's right there, the audio, the video. You can spend a little time watching it. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming to the
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.